I use sex to avoid communication. It's the best escape when we're down on our luck. But I can express more emotions than laughter, anger, and let's f***. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics.
This is the Quality News Network. In trading today, the Dow Jones had a triple-digit decline and fell below the 12,000 mark. We'll have the closing Wall Street numbers coming up in our business block. The Senate passed a procedural vote today to allow debate on a resolution that would set a target date of April 1, 2008 for the U.S. combat mission in Iraq to end. The Republicans say they will have the votes to defeat it. President Bush has threatened a veto of both the Senate and House bills that call for a troop withdrawal. An Iraqi army spokesman says that the number of civilian deaths in Baghdad has gone down, as well as the number of insurgent attacks. A U.S. military commander also says the security plan in Baghdad is showing, quote, positive signs of progress. However, today, three U.S. soldiers died and nine were injured in the Diyala province. Iraq's President Jalal turned back to his Kurdish hometown today. He spent the past 17 days in a hospital in Jordan after he collapsed in northern Iraq. North of Baghdad into Crete, the bodies of Saddam Hussein's two sons and grandson have been exhumed and reburied near his grave. President Bush wrapped up his Latin American trip by holding a press conference in Mexico today with Mexican President Felipe Calderon. Bush pledged to update the U.S. immigration laws and crack down on illegal drug trafficking. President Bush was also asked about the recent firing of eight U.S. attorneys. He responded that he is standing by Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. However, the president admitted, as Gonzalez did yesterday, that, quote, mistakes were made. Attorney General Gonzalez will meet with congressional lawmakers over the next week to further explain the matter. Yesterday, his chief of staff resigned because he failed to give complete explanations to Congress about the removal of the eight prosecutors. In a civil trial involving the relatives of victims of the USS Cole bombing in 2000, the federal judge in the case said today that Sudan is responsible for the attack. On Saturday, there will be a vote by the Palestinian Legislative Council on the new Palestinian Unity Government, which will bring Hamas and Fatah together. A UN report predicts that in the year 2050, the world's population will reach 9.2 billion. It is currently 6.7 billion. Most of all of the new growth is expected in the developing world. You are listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business News, next.
Terry's Lounge at the Cypress Inn in downtown Carmel invites you to a great evening of your favorite foods, beverages, and live music Thursday through Saturday, featuring Dick Whittington and friends from 6 to 9:30. Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn features an appetizer-sized menu and our famous burger, salad, and fries. Afternoon tea, a great local tradition, is served from 1 to 4 p.m. daily by reservation. Sunday evenings are special as Richard Divnick entertains from 5 to 8 p.m. with classical renditions of pop, jazz, and classical music. Join the fun, food, and music at Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn, corner of Lincoln and 7th. In downtown Carmel.
The Texas House of Representatives today voted to overturn the governor's controversial executive order that would require sixth grade girls to receive an anti-cervical cancer vaccine. There is a similar bill under consideration in the Texas Senate. The FDA is warning that widely prescribed sleeping pills such as Ambien and Lunesta can cause dangerous side effects, including sleep driving and sleep eating. In both instances, the patient has no memory of the activity. The FDA wants stronger warnings on the medication labels. California's Attorney General announced a plea deal has been reached in the HP media spying scandal. The former Hewlett-Packard chairwoman, Patricia Dunn, and three others will enter guilty pleas to misdemeanor charges today. General Motors reported it had a fourth quarter profit of $950 million after several quarters of losses. Overall, in 2006, GM lost $2 billion. Scholastic, Inc., the publisher of the seventh and final Harry Potter book, will print 12 million copies in its first printing. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows will be released July 21st. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $58.16 a barrel. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was up 57 points at 12,133, NASDAQ up 21, S&P 500 up 9. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Six minutes past the hour of the week has come, the work week, just the weekday week has come to an end. And we've got 3 hours to cuss and discuss this afternoon, this evening, depending upon where you are in the world, and we're going to do a bunch of it. Breaking news. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed has admitted he was the originator of the plot to assassinate Julius Caesar. He also admits he was Lucretia Borgia's chief poisoner. He sank the Titanic, the Lusitania, and the Andrea Doria. He bombed Pearl Harbor, authored the script of Heaven's Gate and Ishtar, and ghostwrote O.J.'s If I Did It. After all, there's more than one kind of bomb. Okay, with that having been said, all levity aside, big Friday news dump. This felt like a big old dump truck of bricks today. And you've got to ask, sometimes it's only fun, only fair and fun, to ask the question, you got to, either I'm ahead of the curve, or somebody out there is listening and taking notes. Last night, during the program, I inquired, because the entire Justice Department, based on what we now know, is tainted. I asked, reasonably, I think, whether or not the deal in Florida that's been cut, whereby federal prosecutors will move to reduce the sentence of Jack Abramoff, is another inside sleaze by the Bush administration. And then what do I find today? Z. Byron Wolf of ABC News, quoting, at an off-camera but on-the-record briefing, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, D. Nev, contended the U.S. attorney's controversy threatens to politicize the people who, quote, make federal cases. Quote, today we hear the U.S. attorney in Florida is going to try and reduce Abramoff's sentence, Reid proclaimed, referring to the disgraced former lobbyist sentenced to 6 years in the federal pen and has pleaded guilty to three other charges. The Democratic majority leader rhetorically asked reporters gathered in his Capitol Hill office, is he a Bushy? Talking about the federal prosecutor moving to cut the sentence. Very interesting. Very, very interesting. But how can you help but ask a question like that?
It's a reasonable question at this point in time. Meanwhile, a spokesman for the Justice Department's Criminal Division said, and I quote,
"The government has recommended that Abramoff's sentence be reduced based on the cooperation to date, but we ask the court to reserve entering the reduction until Abramoff's cooperation is complete so that the court can evaluate all of the cooperation. Only the court can reduce a sentence. The government can only recommend a reduction in a sentence based on substantial cooperation."
Wonder what might be in those 18 days worth of missing emails about the Abramoff case. You just don't know, do you? No, you don't. But Harry Reid, you know, he's not as tough as I'd like for the Senate Majority Leader to be. He's not moving the Senate in directions I would like the Senate to go, or with the speed I would like them to take. But he does know stink when it enters his nostril, and this thing stinks. And of course, there's more to it than that. One of the lead items in the news today, of course, ex-interior deputy by the name of J. Stephen Griles has pled guilty in connection to the graft and corruption and filth that is the Jack Abramoff scandal. He pled guilty today to obstruction of justice in a Senate committee's investigation. At this point in time, Mr. Griles is the highest-ranking Bush administration official, although I don't think he'll hold that record for long, to be connected to the Abramoff garbage. He was the Bush administration's number two at the Interior Department. And what he did is he stuck his hand up in the air and put his hand on the Bible, other hand on the Bible, and he swore before God and man that he would tell the truth in front of the United States Senate, and then he sat down and proceeded to lie his filthy, stinking hide off. In front of the court, he said, "I'm sorry for my wrongdoing. I fully accept the responsibility for my conduct and the consequence it may have. When a Senate committee asks questions, they must be answered fully and completely, and it is not my place to decide whether those questions are relevant or too personal. I apologize to my family, my friends, the committee, and its staff." How about apologizing to the nation, you SOB? You Bushy. The judge asked him, "Do you acknowledge that these were materially false statements about your relationship with Mr. Abramoff?" "Yes, Your Honor." Now, okay, so what? So what? Well, here's so what. This is, of course, a prosecution brought and managed by the Bush administration Justice Department. Well, see, Bob, that proves that they're not corrupt. They'll police their own. No. It's a Ginsu commercial. But wait, there's more. What he did is he acknowledged concealing that his relationship with Abramoff had been unique because of their introduction through Griles' then-girlfriend, Italia Federici. He's a former oil and gas lobbyist. Dig that. This guy was the number two man at the Secretary of Interior, and he is a former oil and gas lobbyist. Well, that's kind of like when they made, a former coal company sleaze bucket, the head of MSHA? Yeah, it's a little like that. So, here's the fun part of the prosecution that sort of makes your pink little ears perk up. The deal, this plea agreement, the federal prosecutors proposed no more. Now, this guy swore an oath
and then sat there and stared senators in the eye and lied and lied and lied and lied. And the Bush administration proposed for him a mandatory minimum sentence of, somebody who lies under oath about something as serious as an utter bald-faced attempt to subvert the government of the United States for business purposes. What would you do to that guy? Now, I don't believe in the death penalty, but I could probably be convinced that the death penalty would be appropriate in such an instance. What kind of penalty would you impose? Well, the Bush administration imposed a 10-month prison sentence. 10 months in club fed, and that was the least that they were legally allowed to ask for, or else they would have asked for less. And that sentence will allow him to only do 5 months behind the razor wire. The other five he gets to do in a halfway house or under house arrest. Now bear in mind, he took an oath, he stuck his hand on the Bible, he put his hand in the air and swore before God and man and the United States Senate to tell the truth. But he's not going to lose the beautiful house in which he'll do house arrest. You know, maybe 2,000-4,000 square feet. Maybe some illegal aliens coming to cut his grass, carry out his trash, wash his dishes, mend his clothes, iron his, take out the laundry, that kind of thing. And all he has to do is wear a little bracelet. After lying to the people of the United States of America. But wait, fans, there's more. As part of this sweetheart deal, well, the prosecution team dropped earlier allegations that Griles did anything improper to help Abramoff. See, they had charged him with doing dirty, rotten, filthy, stinking, corrupt things to help Abramoff advance his career, advance his goals, make more money. And they also dropped charges that he had taken anything or gained anything of value from Abramoff. Because, see, that would have carried some, Randy Duke Cunningham time. They dropped all that. And wait, here's the good part. Oh, you gotta love this part. They also put in writing and signed their little names and agreed, the Bush Justice Department did, that Mr. Griles, who's going to do 5 months in club fed and do 5 months in a halfway house for lying to the American people, he doesn't even have to cooperate in future prosecutions. He doesn't have to tell who was with him in other parts of this sleaze and this graft, because you know it wasn't just one person. Goodness me sakes alive, who could possibly have been involved? The number two guy at the Department of the Interior, second only to the Secretary of the Interior, him or herself. Do you think that Griles, maybe with this Abramoff thing, was involved with, I don't know, some dude that lives under a box on top of a steam grate somewhere in D.C.? Nah, I didn't either. Who do these people hobnob with? Who do these people hang out with? Who do these people start chugging martinis at 3 o'clock on Friday with? The Bush administration? They are the Bush administration. Dick Cheney, Dick Cheney's office, Karl Rove, Scooter Libby, George Bush, Alberto Gonzalez. But that's okay, Mr. Griles. We understand your world is upside down and in turmoil right now, Mr. Griles. We understand. Our heart breaks for you at the United States Department of Justice. That's why you're only going to have to do 5 months behind the bars. And they're not really bars, Mr. Griles. They're more like apartments. And you can have cigarettes, and you can have Jell-O and fruit cup, and you can pretty much come and go as you please on the yard, and we'll get you out of there as quickly as we can, Mr. Griles. We hurt for you, Mr. Griles. We're the Bush Justice Department. And you don't ever, 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 ever have to break the Bush family code of omerta. And you don't have to say who it was who told you to get in bed with Jack Abramoff, who approved it, who lauded it, who slapped you on the back and told you you were doing a heck of a job. You don't ever have to do it, Stephen Griles, former oil and gas lobbyist. You don't have to do it because the word, Mr. Griles, has come down from on high, and I, Mr. Griles, the federal prosecutor, I know where my damn bread is buttered, and I've already been rated as a loyal Bushy. So, Mr. Griles, we'll get you out of that nasty old prison quick as we can. Now, I got to run along, Mr. Griles, because I got to go. I got to go bust a kid, prosecute a kid who got caught with a Saturday Night Special on a rock of crack, and I'm sending his ass to prison for 20 years. See you later, Mr. Griles. I'll make sure you stay on the Christmas card list. This is the Head On Radio Network. This is America's liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise!
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hello, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, go to irs.gov and search for identity theft to find out what to do. That's irs.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484.
Just a postscript, if you will, on the Griles story. Our good friend Nanette in the chat room pointed out that J. Stephen Griles is known well here in the hills and hollers of West Virginia for his cuddly darling relationship with the coal industry. Now this is what he did. Just so you'll know, I mentioned his girlfriend Italia Federici. Well, she put together something she co-founded. Dig it. See, this is why Griles doesn't have to drop the dime. She co-founded an advocacy group with Gail Norton. Name ring a bell? Secretary of the Interior Gail Norton. It was called the Council of Republicans for Environmental Advocacy. Lord, that's like pornography. She founded this thing with Gail Norton. And with, drumroll please, Grover Norquist. Freedom of Information Act requests show that Griles' office calendars show frequent meetings with Federici occurring within days of them being discussed in emails between Federici and Abramoff. And then Griles turned around and routinely passed on departmental information to Federici, who passed it on to Abramoff according to those emails. When the Senate questioned him about it, he said it is outrageous and not true that Abramoff had any special access to him at Interior and that no special relationship existed between them. Dig it, he routinely passed on departmental information to Federici, you know, across the pillow. No, I wasn't at the Department of Interior, I was in bed. I wasn't lying. That's my bag, baby. He spied on the Department of the Interior and passed information on to a hostile third party, namely Jack Abramoff. This isn't obstruction of justice. This is espionage. And he gets 5 months at Club Fed and 5 months in a halfway house for it. Lord God, how many years is the federal government trying to put Lieutenant Aaron Watada in prison for? Yeah, somebody go find the aluminum lady with the sword, the blindfold, and the scales and see if she can make it balance. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend David calls from the state of Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I was away for a little bit because sometimes when you get on the phone, I just lost the energy to vent or something. I'm like, all right, somebody else will fill it or whatever.
That's okay. Take a breath.
Yeah. When we start, there's a lot of issues to start with, and I hope, and I want a lot of people to pay attention to what I'm going to say tonight. The Gonzalez attorney scandal, you know, I'm beginning to believe that Alberto Gonzalez isn't a Mexican. Now, hear me out. I think he put shoe polish on his face like Fisher Stevens did in Short Circuit. Johnny Five! I mean, hey, I'm glad I'm not on radio, because right now I would be fired. But, you know, I'm glad I'm not a radio DJ. But I just wanted to bring that up with Gonzalez. And I can't believe this guy has the gall to go out there and stutter and say, I do this job for the children. Like he's like Max Headroom or something. Like he's a Mexican Max Headroom.
Oh, God. You're on a roll, David.
Yeah. Okay. Now, and we know about Gonzalez and the attorney scandal, you know, and we know he's guilty as all hell. But the thing that's important for people to understand is everything connects together, and I don't care if people can say, oh, you're a conspiracy nut. You want to know how it connects together? Let's have fun with this one. Tony Snow today. Did you see the briefing?
Say again, please, David.
Tony Snow, did you see the briefing?
I did not today.
Oh!
No, but I know there's something dead and rotten growing near his gut.
I'm going to say something that's going to, just like old people are going to go, aha! Like they're a monk or something. Anyways, Tony Snow said today that he was leaving for 2 weeks. Guess why? His cancer. Now, David, why are you being so insensitive to cancer?
No, that's okay. I've already been in. I've got it. Yeah, it's on the list. I'm being insensitive, too.
I know. Why are you being insensitive to cancer victims? Let's go back to limbo. What did he say yesterday? He said something. I believe that limbo was given the heads up. Because what limbo said yesterday, I know this is a little conspiracyville, but what limbo said yesterday, people, pay attention. He said something out of turn immediately after the Edwards campaign came out, and they were like, why did Limbo have to say that? The thing that's important is that now, when Tony Snow has left, he said, I have a problem, and I have to go into a checkup for 2 weeks. You have to go a checkup for 2 weeks when you're in the middle of an attorney scandal and you can't answer questions because you might perjure yourself? Think about it for a second.
Oh, I know. Well, see, I'm even meaner than you, David.
Oh, I know.
You don't have to agree so quickly.
Yeah.
But no, I'm sitting here. You know, we're all, you know, we are all Alice through the looking glass. We are all down the rabbit hole after 6 years of this filthy administration, and we see evil motives behind everything they do. And I can imagine that after John Edwards' and his wife's announcement. That there was some sort of the morning strategery meeting there at the White House, and somebody looked up and said, gentlemen, we cannot allow a cancer gap. Can one of y'all get the cancer?
And now guess who's subbing in for her? Subbing in for him.
Oh, Dana Perino.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, the girl who does White House briefings, like, you know, with all the upspeak, you know, like.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing that really got to me this week was, what I heard on the morning this morning was, oh, really? And I don't know if you heard about this. Do you have that soundbite?
No, I don't.
Well, apparently, O'Reilly got mad at his female host. He says, I can't believe you said that. No, they have a testimony. You got to hear it, Bob. It's funny. I can't believe you said that. She's out for 5 minutes. Oh, you're out for 5 minutes. How can you come not prepared? Do your research. You think I'm making this up?
I don't think so at all. I think the wheels are coming off of O'Reilly's little bus.
And then she started talking about, well, there isn't a testimony. There isn't a testimony. There isn't going to be a transcript. There's going to be a transcript. There's a Senate transcript. There's going to be a transcript. And then all of a sudden he's like, cut her mic off. It's up at Media Matters if people want to take a look at it.
Wonderful.
I just thought I'd mention that because, I mean, I really feel for the woman who has to work with him, but she needs to realize it's time to go.
Well, you know, when the cold salt water stick starts licking around your ankles, yeah, it's time to head for the rowboats.
Right, and that's the only thing I wanted to mention on that.
Seriously, just a little background on this, on backing up to Tony Snow. He came out today and he said, I'll be gone having surgery.
Yeah.
Monday. They found a mass in my lower right pelvic area, and I mean, so this comes out a day after Mrs. Edwards.
I cannot trust the Kevin Bacon of the White House.
No,
I can't trust him. There's nothing, and I mean, to top it all off, Bob, let's go to the Iran issue.
Well, I think they're. I mean, if it's for real, David, if it's for real, I think they're afraid that if they let Tony Snow go too long, it's going to be alien all over again, and the little thing's going to bust out of his gut and go, you know.
Well, he's going to have to step down like Ari Fleischer probably because he knows a lot.
Yeah, and you know that's not good for you to know a lot with these people.
So I was listening to on this other issue with Iran. I don't know if anyone knows, and you probably know already, Bob. But I guess there's a provision now that released Bush. He doesn't have to have the authority permission from Congress to attack, and Nancy Pelosi put it in. You know why she put it in? Can anyone take a guess?
I wouldn't even dare.
Because she got booed at AIPAC. Wrap your head around that one, people. Wrap your head around that one, people. You know what this reminds me? This reminds me of when I was telling you about when Kerry and Crispin Miller...
When he said he didn't, never said, and he said, and Mark Crispin Miller said yes, he did, yeah.
No, when Mark Crispin Miller said, I think we talked about it before, when he said, why didn't you go after him? Well, he said it on the radio, he goes, why didn't you go after him? Because I didn't want to look like a fool. You know, it's so sad. I mean, Nancy, you were so off my...
Well, I'd like to see the documentation behind this stuff. I always figured that the Bush administration it wouldn't require anything nearly as nefarious as that. That they would say that they had the authority to attack Iran under the provisions of the Iraq War Resolution. You know, the George Bush thinks he has the authority to attack anybody he damn well pleases.
Just to put some background on this, I guess a woman was really going like a little bit. Ecstatic on the phones. I mean, she was really just like really worked up over it. And she said the only place they reported it was a South Carolina TV station. And I guess it's in there. And she said she called them up. And they did some research. And I guess Stacey Taylor was subbing in for Randy Rhodes. I'm just hipping this to the background of where I got it.
Yeah.
And Stacey said that, well, it looks like it checks out. And the provision is in there. It's hidden in there.
Oh, Lord, I've got to, if you find it, shoot it to me. I got to read this.
I want people in the chat room, if you're there, because I don't know why it doesn't work when I go in there. It must be like the RNC Gestapo.
You got to load Java, David.
I need to update my Java.
Well, you really do. I mean, I think there's been 4 updates in the last 3 months.
Yeah, that's a problem. You know, I'm still stuck on the Tron version of Java.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh,
you know,
and the bad costumes.
You know, before I go, I wanted to get your take on the British soldiers being kidnapped, and if you think that's the Gulf of Tonkin.
It is the Gulf of Tonkin. It's see, that's the nice thing, because that's the nice thing for the Bush administration, and because it plays into exactly what I said a minute ago. If they can just anywhere, I mean, at the outside boundaries, the outer limits, the twilight zone of reason, David, if they can somehow tie anything going on with Iran into what's going on in Iraq, then they say, well, you know, the Iraq War Resolution covers it, and we can have all the war we want.
I think Bush had a special screening with the director of 300 and jumped up on the screen and said, see, they did it, and we can do it.
I just want. Does Ahmadinejad have all them piercings like Xerxes does? Oh God!
You know, one last thing before I go, because I know you're running on time. But did you see Tom DeLay on Chris Matthews?
Oh yeah, I did. I did see that. That was just beautiful. That.
Yeah.
I
gotta get my glasses.
I don't have my glasses.
I don't have my glasses. And then you know.
Because when I wears my glasses make pages say things that they don't say, and I said blinded, not drunk.
And then, of course, I don't know if you heard about Mitt Romney insulting the Cubans.
No, but that'll play well at the Republican National Committee. No, no, share.
I guess Mitt Romney said a phrase the Cubans didn't like in Miami. He said, I don't exactly.
What, remember. Viva Castro?
He said something that Hugo Chavez said, and he repeated it over and over again. And they were like, he did it in Miami.
Yeah, and so they're sitting there on his hands and on their hands, and he doesn't understand why it's all quiet, and he's hearing the South Florida crickets.
But it gets better or worse depending on who you root for. Romney at the end was so worked up in his Masonic speech, he was like, "Libertad, Libertad, Libertad," and someone mentioned to him that, don't you realize where that phrase is most famous from? And I didn't know this because I don't really pay attention to Brian De Palma film dialogue that much, but obviously, but it's from the movie Scarface.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And they were really mad at him. And I can't believe Romney. He actually tried to spin this, Bob, and said, "We got to take the phrase back, man. We got to take it back, man."
Oh, Lord. Yeah, next thing you'll be standing up in front of they'll be standing up in front of crowds saying, "Say hello to my little friend."
And last thing before I go, I sent you some, I don't know if you saw it, I sent you some music called Four Hero, The Changes.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Oh, you like it?
Yeah.
That's cool. Well,
I've got broad tastes.
I'm just trying to keep you hip. That's a UK production outfit. They've been around for, believe it or not, almost two decades now.
It is hip. It is every bit of that. And by the way, if you'll shoot I got to figure out a way. Stay on the line after we get done, and Agnes will give you an email address, and we'll get you hooked up with John Fox, and he'll get you into the chat room one way or the other.
All right, cool. Thank you.
All right, take care, David.
All right, you take care too, Bob. One more thing. Libertad!
I was going to say, Libertad! Libertad!
Later.
Oh, these fools. Take care, David. Like I said, it's a Friday, and it's just loaded for bear. Is that am I just mean and filthy and rotten for saying what I said about Tony Snow, or is it okay? Are you suspicious? Am I the only one? Did I forget my medication today, or does the fact that one day after Elizabeth Edwards announces that she's once again in the literally a battle for her life, that Tony Snow comes out, "I got it too. Love me." We cannot allow a sympathy gap, gentlemen. Somebody's got to get cancer here. Snow, take one for the team. You've already had it. We'll tell him. Look, no. It's like Capricorn 1. You can just go sit at home for a while. We'll trot out some doctor who will say that. No. We're not going to make you go have surgery at Walter Reed. Now stop it. Oh, you've wet yourself, Tony. So I don't know. I can't trust, honest to God, if a Bush administration official came out and said that the sky was blue, I would have to run to a window. Because you cannot believe a single blessed thing that they say. And apparently, he had colon cancer before Tony Snow did. Anybody dealing with this, your heart has to go out to them. Doesn't it? Am I just a creepy SOB because somehow or another I can't get my heart to go out to Tony Snow? Out of an aggressive sense of caution, I'm going in for surgery. You know, I mentioned Khalid Sheikh Mohammed yesterday in conjunction with Walter Mitty, that wonderful short story by James Thurber, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. And, of course, Thurber was just a genius with language. And one part of that brilliant short story has him fantasizing his way into being a world-famous surgeon. Oh, my God. He's got coreopsis of the ductal tract. Tertiary. God. Tests since the growth was discovered in his lower right pelvic area have been negative for cancer, but the doctors decided to remove it to be sure. I'll be damned. And they just decided to remove it the day after that Elizabeth Edwards said that she's back in the fight of her life. But, you know, it's great for Tony because Tony's got some wonderful health care. I mean, that was discovered by a PET scan. You know what a PET scan is? It's positron-emitting tomography. This stuff discovers cancer on almost a subcellular level, this thing does. And there wasn't a question. Oh, no, sir. You want a PET scan, Mr. Snow? You want two? We can do three. Because you have the best health care coverage on this entire planet. And I'm sorry, it's just the way I am. How many people out there, how many Americans, how many people who actually, unlike Tony Snow, get up and go to work every day instead of just standing in front of a camera and lying like a rug, how many people, how many Americans have something vile and rotten and awful growing inside them and they can't get a PET scan, a positron-emitting tomography scan, they can't damned well get one because their insurance company says they're too expensive. How many? How many? Oh, Bob, you're just cruel. Fine. But you know what? No sympathy for Tony Snow until there's a little sympathy for a guy, you know, for a guy who makes $6.25 an hour, whose guts are rotting, and is wondering what's going to happen to the wife and kids when he's gone. Because the fact of the matter is, if Tony Snow drops dead tomorrow, his wife, his kids will want for nothing. Nothing. And that same scenario has been played about out among the poor, and not just the poor, the middle class. You know, this guy, this sleazy bastard works for a man whose party, and works for a party that stood on the floor of the House and said that medical bills in bankruptcy, the people suffering from catastrophic medical illnesses who are absolutely crippled by their medical bills, that they shouldn't be able to get relief from bankruptcy and try to salvage what's left of their lives. No, I'd, on a very, very human level, I feel sorry for anyone who is beset by something that, like this. But to trot it out today, no. This is a play for, this is something nasty. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Bob calls in from North Dakota. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Hello, my friend.
How are you?
Still living, still breathing air.
Setting them up and knocking them down.
Not really. No, not really, Bob. The sadness is this, okay?
Yeah.
The good men do nothing while bad men do everything. Think about it, okay?
Yeah.
There's good men doing nothing. They're just, you know, they're just standing by to stand by. You know, waiting for somebody else, another good man, to do something. But guess what? I mean, if you stop and think for a moment, you know, 200 and some odd years ago, there were a few good men, just a few of them, okay?
Yeah.
And some of their names were like, you know, John Adams and,
Jefferson.
George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, they did something. But guess how many of those men left a legacy, left this, this bush thing, hypocrisy. I think that's what it is. It's a legacy of hypocrisy. And it started with Ronald Reagan. Really, it started with Ronald Reagan.
No argument here.
It has gone on and on and on. And how long will we, the people of the world, not the United States, forget it. The United States is a dead nation, a dead nation full of dead heads. Like, what was that thing they had years ago? Max Headroom?
Ma- tax headroom. Yeah, David just mentioned that a couple of minutes ago.
It's kind of a, you know, you're twisted and turned, and you don't even have a life of your own. Well, how about getting one? Get a life of your own. Get a life. You know, I heard that years ago. Get a life. Well, I've had a life, and I've lived it, and I've lived it very well so far. I have had a wonderful wife that has kept me from going out and destroying these piglicans. I mean, these repiglicans. I mean, these repugnant sons.
Yep.
These filthy sons. These filthy sons of rotten, what do you call them, Barbara Bushevics?
Yeah. Well done.
They are filth that came out of filth. And that rotten thing, that thing that spit these things out of its womb, that Barbara, just nasty across the board. It's filth, Bob. It is like the spawn of Satan. It is the spawn of hell that has been pushed out to destroy this planet. And if good men, decent men like yourself, and so many others, I think about Tom Hartman, I think about that crazy man out there, that one I love so much, that Mike Malloy. You know, I think about you, and I think these are men that I am proud to stand with, and I stand for one thing, the truth. I do not stand for, you know, kind of the, you know, this wrap myself in a flag thing, because, you know, I saw my friends that had wrapped themselves in that belief back in the Johnson era and the Nixon era, and I saw them shredded. I saw their bodies bagged in green bags and sent home to their mamas for their mamas to bury and say, oh yeah, well, he did his best for his country. But did he really? In Vietnam, whose country were we fighting for? We did not fight for the United States of America. Nor are these young men today fighting for the United States of America. They're fighting for, I don't know, Halliburton and...
don't discount the fact that for 8 weeks of basic and however far on out that they go for their training afterward, every day it's beaten into their brains that, yeah, you're defending freedom.
No, you're not defending...
But Bob, that's what they're being told.
No, see, that's the problem, Bob. I raised my right hand more times than I'd say 98% of the American men in this nation have raised their hands, and I have sworn to defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, both foreign and domestic. I did not swear to any deity or to any King George the
upon your honor.
I swore that I would defend this nation against all enemies of the Constitution. I did not swear to protect the president against the people of the United States, nor did I swear that I would defend the president against them. So therefore, the people of the United States, I mean, I'm talking to all the people of the earth, rise up and stand against this filthy Nazi rotten Bush administration. I'm asking, I'm begging, I'm pleading, I'm asking you all to find a way, if it means to get out in the streets with your pots and pans and beat them together and scream, we are finished. We do not want any more Bush that have tried and are trying to destroy the United States and what it really stands for, a nation of the people and by the people and for the people. And as Abraham Lincoln said, may it never perish from the earth, but it is perishing before your eyes, as the earth perishes, as Al Gore said, before your eyes, the earth is perishing. So people, please, for your sake, for your children's sake, for your grandchildren's sake, for the progeny of your loins' sake, please fight, stand up, get out in the streets, bang them pots and pans together and say, no more Bush, no more of these Nazis, no more of these filthy, rotten Hitler. Yes, George Bush is Hitler incarnate. He is the same thing, just a dumb wog walking around prancing like a prince, thinking he's a man, a monkey on a string being led by corporate America, by the filthy, rotten corporatists. And that's what they are, Bob.
Yep. Well, what do you what do you do, Bob, with a guy like Stephen Griles, who literally spies on the government of the United States to pass information along to his corporate buddies? What do you do with a guy like that? Is 10 months
Bob,
in Club Fed?
No. There's a thing that we do with hogs out here in the Great Plains.
Okay, many people are eating their dinner right now. So
I understand, but there's a thing we do with hogs out here. When they're little piglets, we just kind of neuter them. You know,
it seems like spying on your own government ought to be worth at least a year and a year of hard time. A year making big rocks into little rocks.
See what they did to the Jews in Germany. They neutered them. They found a way to castrate them and well, what's this thing they talk about? Snip, and it's all gone, right? The thing is, you got to take it out of the Congress. You got to neuter the Congress. You got to take that Republican, that Republican, you know, that arrogance away from them.
The cancer.
The way you do it is to make them less than men and be a man. Be a liberal like George Washington was when he crossed the Delaware in the dead of winter to go across and then take that town away from them Hessians.
Yep,
them,
Trenton, them, New Jersey. Exactly.
Yeah, and go over there and take it away from them Hessians, because it was Hessians he fought. He didn't fight the Brits there. He went over to Delaware. He crossed the Delaware.
Crossed the Delaware and attacked Trenton, New Jersey.
Yeah, and he took it away from the Hessians. He didn't take it away from the Brits. He took it away from a bunch of
mercenaries.
Blackwater boys.
Yeah,
he took it away from a bunch of them mercenaries. And you know what? I'm not afraid of a mercenary. I'm not afraid of them, because the only thing that a mercenary has in mind is how much money he can make. Yeah?
Sure.
And I have faith in the American people. And one day soon, they will wake up and realize how badly they have been used, abused, and, you know, just confused, Bob.
You're right. Bob, we got to roll.
Good for you, and a lovely weekend to your beautiful bride, Agnes.
All right.
You, my friend, I'll talk to you later.
All right. Later, Bob. Take care.
Bye-bye.
News is next. After that, your thoughts on the Head-On Radio Network, The Horn, America's liberal voice, 877-443-2366. Learn it, know it, use it. I'm Bob Kincaid.
is the Quality News Network. The House voted today to approve the $124 billion Iraq war spending bill. The bill requires combat operations in Iraq to end by September 2008 or earlier. The vote is seen as a victory for House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. She said, quote, "The American people have lost faith in the president's conduct of the war." Just an hour after the House vote, President Bush commented on the passage of the Iraq bill, accusing the House of abdicating its responsibility by passing the legislation which he says undermines the troops. The president says the vote and his promised veto will delay the delivery of resources needed by U.S. troops fighting the war in Iraq. Since the beginning of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, Congress has provided $500 billion to fund them, not including the $124 billion bill before Congress now. More than 3,200 U.S. troops have been killed since the Iraq War began over 4 years ago. Today in the Persian Gulf, 15 British soldiers and Marines were seized by Iranian naval forces. The British personnel had boarded a merchant ship in the Iraqi waters for a routine ship inspection when they were captured by the Iranians. The British government immediately protested the detentions, while the Iranian government has declined to make a comment. Iraq's deputy prime minister was gravely injured today at his home when a man wearing an explosive vest blew himself up in a courtyard mosque. 9 people were killed in the attack, which occurred near the Green Zone in Baghdad. Iran's president will not be coming to the United States tomorrow, as expected. He was to speak to the United Nations Security Council, which is considering further sanctions against his country for failing to halt its uranium enrichment program. No word on why his trip was canceled at the last minute. 6-party talks aimed at convincing North Korea to abandon its nuclear weaponry program may reconvene within 2 weeks. North Korea's envoy walked out of the negotiations yesterday, saying they will not participate until the U.S. unfreezes $25 million North Korean dollars. In Washington, a bipartisan immigration bill has been introduced in the House, which creates a new system permitting immigrants to work in the U.S. while they petition for American citizenship. A chemical used in rat poison is at least partially to blame for the national recall of over 60 million cans and pouches of pet food. According to agricultural officials, rodenticide on wheat imported from China was used in nearly 100 brands of dog and cat food. You're listening to the Quality News Network, science and business news. Coming up next, now this.
Heads up, crew. This is Captain Mike from Bombardier's Lounge, World War II Big Band Jazz. I've got a book for all of you crew members interested in World War II in the air. Its title is Letters Home, Memoirs of a World War II Troop Carrier Pilot by Frank G. Hathaway. Hathaway's book is dedicated to the air crewmen who lost their lives in the Southwest Pacific, 1942 to 1946, while flying their unarmed C-46s and C-47s over the jungles, the ocean and mountains in New Guinea and the Philippines. In his book, Frank talks in his letters home about his experiences flying as a pilot with the 6th Troop Carrier Squadron, the first squadron of troop carrier planes in the Southwest Pacific. This is a book you're really going to enjoy having in your library. It's available at Amazon.com. Get this book. Ask for it by name, Letters Home by Frank G. Hathaway, published by Trafford Publishing. That's an order.
A scientific report issued today says ocean-going ships produce more air-polluting sulfur dioxide than all of the world's vehicles combined. The International Council on Clean Transportation is calling on shipping companies to voluntarily clean up their act. A Southern California farm is suing Taco Bell for alleging that its green onions spread E. coli through the fast food chain last December. The farm's onions were first linked to the outbreak, but then later cleared. More than 70 people were sickened in the outbreak. Prices for birth control pills are doubling and in some cases tripling on college campuses nationwide. A change in Medicaid rebates means pharmaceutical companies no longer have an incentive for providing inexpensive drugs to student health centers. The Los Angeles City Attorney's Office will file misdemeanor theft charges against 10 airport screeners at LAX who are accused of stealing personal items from passengers' bags. Celebrities, including Paris Hilton, were among those robbed. In February, sales of existing homes were up by the largest amount in nearly 3 years, according to the National Association of Realtors. They rose 3.9% last month. Light sweet crude is trading at $62.28 a barrel, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was up 20 points, the Nasdaq down 3 points, and the S&P 500 was up 2 points. There is more on our website at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Christine Kendall.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, you are. And I hope at some point we will get to that story about the doubling of birth control costs on college campuses, because there's something more than meets the eye there. But right now we go straight to the phones. Phil is calling from Daytona Beach, Florida. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Hi, Bob. Thanks. Boy, it's a lot to talk about.
We're covered up tonight, aren't we?
Oh, man. So many things. What can we do with... What's the guy's name that got off easy?
Griles.
You know what? I don't know if the piece is on the Horn web page or not, but print it out and send it to, a local... Somebody just print it out, put it in an envelope, and send it to a local VFW post. You know, the guys that... America, say, hey, here's a guy that is a traitor to our country. And just pose the question: do you think 10 months is and let them ponder it.
There are so many questions that arise out of this thing, Phil. Because a prosecution like this, we've got to bear in mind, a prosecution like this of a senior administration official does not happen without the active, hands-on supervision of the Attorney General of the United States himself.
Mm-hmm.
So when the decision was made to drop those allegations, when the decision was made to recommend that this guy do the least amount of time in prison possible, it is absolutely... institutionally impossible, Phil, that was not signed off on and approved by none other than Alberto Gonzalez.
Well, let me ask you this, Bob. Is there an actual piece you were reading from the news report?
I found it over at Truthout.
Okay, let's
see. It's an AP story.
If it's an AP story, maybe we can even grab it from just... any newspaper that's on the wire,
right.
and post it on the Horn web page, and any of us listening, Bob, the other Bob that you
in North Dakota.
North Dakota, talking about what people we have to do, we have to be involved. This isn't going to be something that those of us who are used to watching television and listening to the progressive radio and calling in. We decide to give an hour a week and think that's going to change what's happening. Man, we've got a big, big, big fight on our hands. And the longer we put it off, the bigger the fight's going to be if we even have a chance at a fight. So these are things. We post this AP story up on the Horn webpage. People go to it. They print it off on their printer. And they don't have to mail it out to 100 VFW posts. Just mail it to your local VFW post and write a little note on saying, for those of you guys who fought in the wars to defend our country, does this 10-month sentence seem right to you? And just pop it in the mail. These are little things that we can do. One of the things, if this vote today, I cried today. I haven't cried since my grandma passed away, and I could probably count the number of times on one hand I've cried in my life, where I couldn't hold it, and I cried today with this vote, Not that it was a surprise. I knew it was going to happen, but the reality of it
You mean in terms of going ahead and funding this supplemental?
Yeah, I mean, supplemental, you're funding war.
Yeah. More war.
Yes, I mean, you want to stop the war, you stop giving Bush the money to execute it, and then, right on cue, you got your Gulf of Tonkin with these, of course it's not the Americans who got taken by the Iranians, it's the Brits. Just like the Brits were the ones who found the yellow cake, you know, from Africa.
Right.
You know, I mean, you know, it's so much. But it's right on cue, you know. How many guys have been warning about the Gulf of Tonkin incident coming up? Congressman Ron Paul from the House, you know, the floor of the House. This has been, we've been getting these warnings for months, and now, geez, with almost to the minute, the vote for this additional $124 billion in the Democrats, you know, signing off on George Bush's war, which is now Nancy Pelosi's war and every other Democrat that signed on to it, right on cue, we've got our Gulf of Tonkin incident, and Cheney can have his invasion of Afghanistan, you know, not Afghanistan, what is it?
Iran.
Iran, you know, Afghanistan was first, then Iraq. David from Maine will tell you the PNAC plan. And
yeah.
I would like, if is it all right to give my email over the air? Or
if you're comfortable with that.
David from Maine, if you're still listening, please email me. restinop@aol.com, and I want to get in touch with you, man, about PNAC and stuff. But anyway, this is right on cue, and I think we need to out the PNAC as much as possible. And those of you who are hip to you know, the ridiculous amount of evidence that about 9/11, not, you know, being not what the government said it was, and you feel kind of funny talking to people about it, stop feeling funny. We just got to start outing what we know to be true, you know. There's enough information about questions about 9/11, Building 7 coming down. I'm not the truth. The 9/11 truth movement's not saying they know what the truth is. They say, you know, what the government said was the truth ain't, and there's too much stuff that's not answered. So let's get down to it. And you know, you're gonna find the PNAC's hands all over that too. You know, same characters keep popping up.
Yeah, it's like one of those old movie studios where the same actors do all the movies.
Yeah.
It's like a repertory company.
Yes, and you know what? John Bolton the other day, former ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton, PNAC, former PNAC director. He was involved with stopping the recount of the old 2000 Florida.
Sure he was. There's a photograph out there. Bart Kopp runs it every now and then, Phil, that shows all of those rioters.
Yes.
And the photo that Bart Kopp runs shows name by name by name, and he'll sit there and tell you, you know, staffer for this,
yes.
Dan Burton, Congressman, Republican, Indiana,
yep.
His staffers, yeah, people, Republican operatives from all over the country went down and literally rioted.
Yes.
At the Dade County Board of Elections.
You know where you'll see that as well? Is a wonderful film, folks who have Google or if you want me to send you a hard copy of this film, called Everybody's Got to Learn Sometime.
That is a dandy.
That's
a primer.
The PNAC guys, and we're trying to do something here with Veterans for Peace locally, where we're going to push this film, Hijacking Catastrophe. It was made in 2003 and 2004, where it outed the PNAC, you know, and their lies to start the war on Iraq, the plans for military bases for future invasions of Iran and Syria, and these guys are carrying this plan out to the letter. You know, everything is right on schedule to include. APAC.
Well, this vote today, not to interrupt you, Phil, too much, but this vote today, you said you wept, and I'm sure, having talked with you on a number of occasions, you wept to know that we're going to fund more slaughter, fund more war, fund more killing. But you know, you gotta call the names of the heroes once in a while too.
Yes, and thank you for mentioning that,
Barbara Lee.
And folks. You know, you can go right to the afterdowningstreet.org website, and the lead story on their page is the nine people, the nine heroes, eight Democrats, Barbara Lee being one of them.
Well, I mean, let's call them by name. Barbara Lee, Dennis Kucinich, John Lewis of Georgia, Lynn Woolsey of California, Diane Watson of California,
Maxine
Waters,
Michaud of Maine.
Michaud of Maine.
McNulty of upstate New York. And
right.
Let's not forget Ron Paul.
And there he
Patriot.
Sits. Yeah.
Of a Republican from Texas.
Now bear, no. Now bear in mind there are some other Democrats here that I'm whose credibility I question. Lincoln Davis of Tennessee voted against it. John Barrow of Georgia voted against it. Jim Matheson of Utah voted against it. Dan Boren, we talked about him before, of Oklahoma voted against it. Gene Taylor of Mississippi, we talked about him before. Those two guys voted against the Employees Free Choice Act. And Jim Marshall of Georgia voted against it. That last handful that I mentioned, those guys voted against it because they like the war.
Exactly. And David Swanson of has a great column on this after DowningStreet.org about those guys, you know, the votes, you know, and pointed out just what you pointed out, Bob, that they didn't vote against it for the same reasons the others did, and this, if folks can go there, there's links right on this lead story of after DowningStreet.org where people can actually link to these folks' email and send them a quick note of thanks, or also get their telephone numbers and call into the offices. We do have to thank these people and acknowledge, you know, let them know that the people support them taking a stand, because if we don't, we might lose them, you know. And if we don't support these handful of people in Congress that are actually representing the people and not AIPAC and the military-industrial complex and
this is a very uncomfortable thing for me, Phil, because it puts people that I do respect, like Dennis Kucinich, it makes them strange bedfellows with the people who want more war, because there was a compromise reached with Nancy Pelosi's office and the Out of Iraq caucus, where they promised her she'd have enough votes to win the
the 218 votes.
Yeah, and they said, look, you know, we'll release enough members that you can get a majority on this. So, you know, there was some game playing involved.
There was.
But you know what? This thing puts a date certain, if the Bush administration can be thought to be constrained by anything as silly as law, it puts a date for the end of the war on it.
And it also gives it. Yes, it does, you know. But the date for the end of the war is long past overdue.
Yes, it is.
You know,
yesterday is the date for the end of the war.
Yeah.
Now let me throw one other thing out there for your consideration,
okay.
Because this was morally painful to me to see how it worked out too. I want the damn war over, Phil. I want it over before the next one can start.
Yes.
On the other hand, I always do recognize that what goes down in Washington is a chess game. Now, George Bush has said that if he gets any kind of a bill that puts an end to the war on his desk, he will veto it.
Yes.
Okay? So, play that out a couple of moves. You know, knight to queen's bishop or whatever. Play that out a little bit and realize that if I think the Senate proposal says March, the House proposal says August 2008, it goes to a conference committee, it comes out, they reach it, they say, okay, by March, April, okay, July. That goes to George Bush's desk. Well, then he says he's going to veto it.
Yes.
Right? He vetoes it. It comes back to the House. Nancy Pelosi is in a point to say, look, George, we gave you the money you asked for. We just asked for a good faith end to this nightmare. Now, we're just not going to take it up. It's over. You had your chance. We offered it to you. You refused to sign it into law. It's over. Now, where's the funding of the war with that, Phil?
You know, I don't know.
Well, it's I'll tell you,
yep.
It's non-existent. At that point in time, in order to get this so-called critical funding for the war, the Bush administration will have to violate the law. They'll have to pull an Iran-Contra. They'll have to do something sleazy, dirty, underhanded in the dark and still of the night.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if they're all not already doing that and have been.
I hear
what you're saying as far as they'll... What do you,
instead of getting up in George Bush's face, they're going to put the this may very. I'm trying to be an optimist here because this thing hurt me, Phil. But I'm trying to be a little bit of an optimist. This thing will put the onus on George Bush and make him be the one who stands up and finally, for once in his stinking life, has to own something. And he will have to own defunding the war. The Democrats won't have defunded the war, Phil. It'll be George W. Bush who defunded the war.
Yeah.
Because this supplemental will defund the war if it doesn't get passed.
You know, Bob, I don't know, man.
I mean, I hear what you're saying. If I'm being a Pollyanna about it, you're free to tell me so.
No, and I'm... No doubt that there's a lot of this chess playing going on, but damn it!
It's
I'm tired of the politicians dictating to us.
Yes.
What's how it's going to be, and you know, and I want to mention, I want to mention Code Pink's actions lately. You know, and there's a group that's, I don't know if somebody said it earlier or I read it somewhere. It's time that the peace and justice movement divorces itself from the Democratic Party, you know. I mean, and Aaron Russo's film, From Freedom to Fascism, you know, which is a great film, folks, you know, watch it. Says it's time to stop being good Democrats and stop being good Republicans and start being good Americans, you know. And I think for quite a while now, to some extent, the peace and justice movement has been co-opted, or I don't know what the right word is, by the mainstream Democratic Party and I think more and more people have got to say, hey, you people work for us, damn it, you know, the American people. And Code Pink is doing these actions in Washington. They have a house set up now where they're actually going into the hearing rooms, you know, that are and making themselves heard. Iraq Veterans Against the War are doing some really neat stuff in Washington now. They're reenacting stuff they did over in Iraq when they put hoods on people's heads and, you know, arrested them, you know, stuff like that, to show the general public, hey, this is what's going on in our name. So I think people, Code Pink, we had the demonstration Monday night for the four-year anniversary of the invasion of Iraq, and because you get onto names like this, national groups like Code Pink and Military Families Speak Out and Veterans for Peace, we get the media attention, we get on the news. And this last Thursday, last night, for the normal weekly demonstration we have here in Daytona Beach, we had like 8 or 10 new people that came out because of Monday's event. You know, it wasn't like one of these anniversary vigils, you know. They
right.
actually came out to our weekly thing, you know, and they're stepping out and getting involved. And like Bob in North Dakota says, and Molly Ivins, we got to be banging pots and pans and demand that these representatives and so-called representatives in Washington do our will. We're really up against going up against AIPAC in the military industrial media complex, you know, we've got
we've got our work cut out for us.
Yeah,
this is an
man.
Uphill climb.
Yeah. But one last thing. I know you've got lots of callers. March 19th, Mayor Rocky Anderson gave another speech out in Salt Lake City and
actively called for impeachment.
Exactly. And the thing about Mayor Anderson is he gives all the reasons in his talk.
I got to see about getting him on the show as soon as possible, Phil.
Oh, well, you know what I'll do? Should I email Agnes with this the remarks? I could email his contact information.
If you'd go ahead and forward the contact information to Agnes, that would be wonderful, Phil.
That's what I'll do, and maybe you guys will have room on the webpage to post his remarks. And here's another thing people can do. When it's posted on the Horn webpage, print it out and just send it to one person. Put it in an envelope and send it to somebody. Even if it's an anonymous, somebody on the other end, wherever, send it with your telephone bill, whatever. Send it to somebody.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
Little things like that. Okay, Bob.
That's okay. Phil, you do great stuff out there, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, Bob. And if up in Maine.
David.
David in Maine, please email Bob Kincaid at bob@headonradio.com so...
I will hook you guys up.
Thank you.
All right, Phil. Take care.
Thank you, Bob. You too.
Be well, and don't let your spirit get down.
No, I'm already lift up after talking with you and listening to the show. Thanks, Bob.
Wonderful. Take care, Phil. Bye. Keep it rolling, Agnes. Let's see. Let's go to Teresa in Canada. Hey, Teresa. Welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Bob. How are you?
I'm well. Yourself?
Oh, okay. I'm kind of changing the topic.
That's okay.
Don't mind. But I was wanted to talk about the tainted pet food.
Oh, yeah, we need to get to that because once again, that's another one of those stories where there's more there than meets the eye.
Well, there definitely is because my dog went through. He's fine now, but about a month, 6 weeks ago, he got so sick after just. Like one can of dog food that we had bought, which is now on the list of the tainted ones. Now, we hadn't kept the can or anything, and we weren't able to be sure that that was what it was. But he almost died. He's a 17-year-old Cairn Terrier, which is kind of like a Scottie.
I know him very well. I love terriers.
Tough little buzzard. but he was so weak. I think he only survived because, luckily enough, I work from home mostly, so I was able to be here. And all I could feed him for 2 weeks was just like liquidy mashed potatoes and...
Oh, poor little guy.
Boiled up chicken rice, that was it. I had to carry him outside, and you don't want to know what would happen when I got him out there. And tons of water, but he made it. But I'm positive now that was it. Same brand at the local store. But
well, and that's the thing. It's brand after brand after brand. You don't think about it because you go to the Big Roy or Old Red or Field and Stream, Yukonuba, Iams. Menu Foods apparently makes all of it, Teresa.
I'm sorry?
This Menu Foods conglomerate makes all of it.
I know.
And again, it relates to our pets, whom, you know, and the nature of our culture is such that we, if our hearts are right and we choose to have pets, we make our pets like our family and we love them
mm-hmm.
dearly.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you think that you're because you know, I mean, I've done it. You sit there at the grocery store and you're like, okay, crude fat, protein content, and you buy what looks like is going to be the best for your pet.
Right.
But it turns out it all comes from the same factory.
I know, and the can that made him sick, it wasn't the brand he normally has, but they were out of that. But okay, well, I'll get one can of this President's Choice.
Yeah.
I'll say the name, dog food.
No, go ahead. I mean, it's okay.
We fed him that, but then threw the can away, cause it was garbage day the next day, and then he got sick. So we took him to the vet, and, you know, they couldn't exactly what it was. That's probably a conspiracy, too. They're probably on a payroll. But I just went on the internet and looked up like holistic cures or whatever you'd call it for animals and that. And I followed that, and he pulled through. He was really, really sick.
And it's, I suppose there are some out there who would say that this is a not as big an issue as what others might be. But I see it as a significant issue, Teresa, because this isn't just the pet food industry. You know, people were dropping dead from spinach with feces contamination a year ago, and there is a commonality between that story and this story, and that is that we have so centralized our food processing system, be it apparently human food or pet food,
mm-hmm.
that an entire nation can be sickened by a screw up in one plant. Now that, you know, I'm sure that the right-wingers and the Republicans and the free marketeers would say, well, yeah, it's capitalism at work. That's the way capitalism works. The survival of the fittest in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. Blah, blah, blah. Well, no, that's not how it's supposed to work.
No, you have these big factory farms, and all the waste and everything is going into the water and that. God knows what they're feeding them. And I don't believe that.
Well, now I'm reading
of either our country or your country are checking.
No.
For mad cow.
And well, the other thing is that one of the things that I saw, and this is equally disturbing, was that somehow or another, this scandal, this episode, was begun because of tainted wheat imported from China that was used in the pet food process.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure I buy that.
I'm not either.
The sickness that my dog had wasn't something that you would think of.
Well, it's rat poison.
Would be seizures and stuff like that. He was just like.
Well, and now, of course, if you're following the story closely, you'll find that it's now being described not as rat poison, but as an ingredient in rat poison.
They just, you can't trust anything.
Well, you know, you can go out and buy rat poison that's got warfarin in it, and warfarin, of course, is an ingredient in a blood-thinning drug called Coumadin that heart patients are given.
Oh, God, we're doomed.
but that's not the only story out there, and I'm sure that there are some people, oh, God, you know, Bob's not going to talk about the important stuff. I got a story about the bees here.
I know.
That thing...
And why are no... CNN especially, like, briefly brought it up, like, a couple weeks ago. But nowhere did I find anyone, you know, positing the idea that maybe it...
Well, what's coming out now, this is a translation from the German magazine, and it's you know, worldwide, excellent quality. Der Spiegel, article by Günther Lotsch, says, are GM crops killing bees? And that's because... with the great bee die off, what we're finding, you know, it's not the wax moth, it's not the mites and the stuff that are the typical scourge of a beehive or a bee colony or a beekeeper's living.
Mm-hmm.
There's no overt apparent cause for it, but they're dropping dead. But now this a man named Walter Heifecker, who's a lobbyist for beekeepers in Germany, is standing up and pointing his finger squarely at the GM crops.
Mm-hmm. Another thing I heard, and this might be kind of out there, but I give it credence, is that like bees use they navigate using some type of sonar, I guess isn't the word or whatever, radar or whatever.
Yeah,
and. It's already been proven that the tested American ships not to like screw up the sonar on whales and dolphins and that, you know,
mm-hmm.
teaching themselves. And I heard someone saying that you know, maybe there's tests being done using that type of thing, and that could, I don't know.
Well, and that's the thing. We're doing things. We're messing with stuff that we don't fully understand.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm a firm believer in not a believer. I'm an adherent to scientific principles, and scientific exploration and scientific research. But What has happened is the giant corporations have taken it over and made science a slave once again to the stock market.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, if you've got a technology, you hustle it out there, you make a buck off of it as fast as you possibly can before you find out that you're killing a bunch of people and have to stop.
Yeah. Before that, you need to move your corporation to the United Arab Emirates.
Exactly. So, you know, I think these are significant issues, Teresa, and I appreciate you bringing them up.
Oh, well, thanks for taking my call.
Oh, always a pleasure, and you have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we've got Wayne. Hey, Wayne, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
I'm getting along. How about you?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm doing all right. Well, I kind of want to address what Phil was talking about.
Okay.
And this is by no means a slur or anything else.
Okay.
You know, I admire what he's doing, and I'm glad we got him on his side, and I, too, am a veteran. But, you know, this is, I just want to read you this paragraph. And this is from David Sirota.
Okay.
And it starts out with a quote. And the quote says, as an organizer, I start from where the world is, as it is, not as I would like it to be, wrote Saul Alinsky, I believe.
Yeah.
One of the 20th century's most successful progressive leaders. This is another quote. That we accept the world as it is does not in any sense weaken our desire to change it into what we believe it should be. It is necessary to begin where the world is if we are going to change it to what we think it should be. That means working in the system. These words are as important this week as they were 35 years ago when they were first published in the book Rules for Radicals, which I assume Mr. Alinsky wrote.
He did indeed.
And I think there's a lot of validity to that. What happened today is by no means perfect, but I think it's a very good first step. You know, we don't have the votes. I mean, our Democrats don't have enough guts to
stop it.
Stop it. I mean, they've proven that. I wish they did.
I do too, and I think we both recognize, Wayne, that they're afraid that the big, mean, bad, nasty Republicans will come out and call them a bunch of panty-waist sissies.
That's exactly what they're afraid of, and that's exactly what would happen.
Because they know that if the Republicans came out and did that to them, that they would have no recourse but to bust out crying.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
And then they'd be afraid to do anything else.
You know, but that's exactly right, Bob. And the scenario that you described with the chess game is absolutely right. What is George Bush going to do?
Make George Bush defund the daggum war.
You're right. That's exactly right. And I think this is a very important step. You know, I'm happy that it happened. And, you know, what we have to work to with the world as it is that in 2008, change our majority from 51 to 61.
In the United States Senate. Because, again, we've got to bear in mind that something is going to pass the Senate in the way of a supplemental, but it will be
a compromise between the House and Senate version.
Well, but it may be even what happens in the Senate may be even worse, Wayne. I mean, I'm not trying to sit here and just be a pessimist and pee on everybody's Wheaties, but the United States Senate, even with this bare Democratic majority, is not exactly known for, you know, its hard left-wing radicalism.
No, it is not.
And bear in mind,
I wished it were.
Yeah, please, there's so much stuff that has to be considered. It is like a chess game because this thing will be taken up in the Senate, and as a function of that, there is one man sitting in the United States Senate who is ready to screw us all, to screw the entire nation. His name is Joe Lieberman.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Believe me, I see that coming too. I truly see that coming.
So, you know, there sits Harry Reid, who, you know, can't run the risk of offending poor, you know, Joe too much, because, you know, Joe will bust him.
Yeah, he will.
And Joe is Joe's a shiv wielder. Okay, Harry Reid won't know he's been stabbed until he can't breathe. You know, because it's going to come in the back and between the ribs.
And Lieberman will be standing there smiling at his face.
You're damn right.
Yeah, I know.
So, you know, something's gonna come out of this, and I don't know how it works in the Senate, but it's got to wind up on George Bush's desk with a definite pullout date, and George Bush must be forced to veto it. And then, if we've got any guts, if we've got any stones, if we've figured out how it works, then we turn on the machine. And everywhere you turn on the television, the question has to be asked. And it has to be asked ferociously and constantly and day after day after day. Wayne, I'm sorry, I'm not yelling at you. Why does George W. Bush hate the troops?
Why does he not support the troops? That's exactly right.
It's about time we took that 2x4 out and took it away from them. They've beat on us with it, and we've sat there and said, "Hit us again." You know, thank you, sir. May I have another?
And I believe that this step today kind of shows that the Democrats at least know where the 2x4 is now.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
hopefully they'll pick it up and start swinging the damn thing.
You know, it's Barbara Boxer picking up that gavel and waving it at that freak Inhofe.
So this ain't yours anymore.
I use this.
I watched that live. That was a wonderful moment.
You know, and I wanted her to go on. Come on, Babs. You know, I use this, and I'll use it on your head.
Exactly. At least you should have smashed his little finger.
But there's a possibility. And I get these emails, Wayne, telling me that every time I talk about a basketball game, or if I talk about something besides Iraq, that I'm letting down the cause. That it needs to be 3 hours a night, 5 nights a week of end the war, put the criminals in prison, end the war. But you know what? I can't do that. Not because it's not the right thing to do, but because there is so much out there. You know, like I started the program, Wayne, there's a guy who's going to get 5 months in Club Fed for spying on the government and passing information to a corporate lobbyist.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that deserves to be out there.
Yes, it does. I mean, all this stuff, it all joins together. It all has to be exposed. I mean, it's just... The same thing with the attorney's firings, you know. That, I mean, it just proves further that these people cannot tell the truth about anything. And, you know, do you think that Lamb wasn't fired because she was getting close to more people? I mean, you know, what's his name? Duke was
the tip of the iceberg. Duke was the patsy.
He was a small guy, just like Libby, for crying out loud.
Yeah, because Wilkes was the guy, and Wilkes got the $140,000 from Dick Cheney.
Exactly. And, you know, all this leads directly to the White House. That's why those people were removed. And these people cannot tell the truth about anything. And all this stuff, it's, you know, all this stuff...
Griles' girlfriend is in business with Gail Norton, the Secretary of the Interior, and Grover Norquist, and she's the one who's passing the information from Griles across the pillow to Federici, and then on to Jack Abramoff. Okay, this goes all the way to the top because Gail Norton is a presidential appointee. She's the Secretary of the Interior. And you know what? The FBI does, or at least they used to. I don't know. Maybe they've got Game Boys now. They used to do background checks. They used to find this stuff out. And somewhere along the way, in the course of doing this, tell me if you hear any black helicopters in the distance, because this doesn't feel like paranoia to me anymore, Wayne.
It's not paranoia.
Because
it's not paranoid.
Somebody has to say to the FBI, who runs the FBI? The Department of Justice runs the FBI. Who runs the Department of Justice? The Attorney General of the United States. Somebody has to say, look the other way, Buster. You didn't see the fact that the appointee for the Secretary of the Interior is in business with a woman named Federici and Grover Norquist, and you also didn't see the fact that they are they're neck deep with a guy named Griles, who's number two at Interior, and you didn't see any of it.
And who she replaced Whitman?
No, Whitman was EPA.
EPA, okay.
She may, I can't remember now. She may be an original.
Okay. But Whitman got bounced because she wouldn't play their games.
Well, yeah,
I mean, as evil as she was.
Yeah, well, she got bounced when she realized that she was going to be personally responsible for poisoning all the first responders at the 9/11 at the 9/11 site.
Right, there you go. Exactly. So,
you know, so I don't feel so paranoid anymore. I don't feel so crazy. You know, I don't feel like because this stuff is all coming together, I don't necessarily think that I'm going to walk out the door and see UFOs.
I believe you're right on that.
And these people are criminals. And one of the questions I would like to ask, and of course none of them will answer it, I would like to have an answer, Wayne, to the question, and put it to, you know, any Democrat, especially the ones who say, well, you know, impeachment is off the table. I want to know at what point, what sort of crime, what sort of thing would make it an imperative to their oath to impeach this man? Because the Griles thing is impeachable, the Iraq War is impeachable, the spying on American citizens is impeachable.
And on and on and on.
Yeah.
You know,
Rocky Anderson's done a real good job of this, like Phil said. He lays it out. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They're covered up in impeachable offenses, and I understand some of this political reality garbage because, you know, we've got a very slim majority. We could never get away with it. And what they're saying is, you know, Joe Lieberman won't let us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what does that say to you about the American Republic that one man, one sleazy little man like Joe Lieberman?
It says we're in deep doo-doo, brother. That's what it says.
He's running the, you know, Bush. You could make an argument that that somewhere along the way, Joe Lieberman is running the government.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. But anyway, that, you know, my point, you know, to Phil is, you know, this ain't not as bad as you think, man. I think that, you know, this is a good first step.
But yeah, put this man in a position where he has to violate the law.
That's exactly right. And, you know, they don't have any problem doing that.
Oh, no, but, you know, maybe, but that goes back to my question. If you finally catch him out and out violating the law.
Yeah, what's going to be your argument for this one?
You know, do I still have to listen to you say that impeachment is not on the table? Or do I have to listen to him say, well, you know, we couldn't possibly accomplish an impeachment in the 21 months that are left to us? Get started, sister.
Right, and that goes back, I mean, you know, like with the wiretaps and all that stuff was, you know, what was all their, well, you know, if you're not doing anything wrong, you don't have anything to worry about. Well, you know, then why isn't Dick Cheney and everybody going up there and testifying under oath?
Exactly.
If they don't have anything to worry about.
Well, you know, that's what they said about wiretapping all of America's phones.
Yeah.
Oh, you're not violating the law. You're not a terrorist. You're not with Al-Qaeda. You know, so what if we're listening to your conversation with old Aunt Sally? You're not doing anything illegal. You don't have anything to worry about. Well, you know, come on, boys. That's, you know, you're the ones that put forward that theory. Come on down. You're not doing anything illegal. Stick the hand in the air, swear the oath, sit down, and tell us.
And tell us. That's exactly right. But listen, I know you got callers lined up, and I'm going to let you...
Well, thanks for helping me to working with me to sort of put some meat on those bones, because I think I want the war to end yesterday.
I do too. I do. Too.
And I the more noise the American people make, the more likely that becomes.
And you know, if we could get this thing through, we put them in one hell of a position. Let's see what you're going to do now, Georgie.
Yeah, at least, you know, because this way, when the veto comes down, Tony Snow doesn't have to be up there behind the podium answering questions about why George W. Bush hates the troops.
Yeah, what's the matter with him now?
It's like it is with Republicans. You know, he's got death growing inside him.
Yeah.
Well. He's got a mass in his right pelvic region, and so they're conveniently going to take that out Monday.
And he's going to be gone for a while.
He'll have to spend more time with his family.
Yeah, well, I bet he's very happy about that.
Yeah, and they're putting that poor little, and I don't want to be accused of being a sexist or anything, but they're putting that poor little bimbette Dana Perino out there.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, this is the Valley Girl.
She won't be able to handle it for too long.
Oh, but, if Helen Thomas gets to ask one question, she's probably going to run crying from the
Helen
room.
Helen got her seat back.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I saw that.
Yeah, I'm real happy about that.
And, that's just beautiful because Dana Perino is going to have to look at her.
Exactly. Exactly. See, there's good things.
There are. It's not time to crawl into the warm bath and get open up a fresh box of razor blades or anything.
I'm not going to do that, brother.
No, sir.
No, I'm not going to do that.
And, the guys, the people that voted to fund this thing, keep the heat on them.
That's exactly right.
If we can end this damn thing, Wayne, we can start talking about health care so that working Americans who have masses growing in their right pelvic region can go get a positron-emitting tomography scan, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Just like Tony Snow did.
Is Tony going to go to Walter Reed?
No.
No?
Okay. No, no. He'll probably go to George Washington University Hospital or maybe Bethesda or, I don't know, maybe Cedars-Sinai in New York or Johns Hopkins or the Mayo Clinic.
Anywhere.
Anywhere but Walter Reed, in other words.
Exactly.
Yeah, he'll go to ARH before he goes to Walter Reed. Oh, God.
Oh, well, tell him I'll be seeing him.
Wayne, you take it easy.
Okay, buddy. Have a good evening.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
Oh, gee. No, you got to laugh a little bit. But, no, it's not time to head for the nearest bridge. I've gotten a couple of emails saying that maybe I've hit on something. That maybe it's worth it to make George Bush answer the question, sir, why do you hate the troops? Because after all, he's already started his crap. What did he say? It denies the delivery of vital resources for our troops. You filthy, filthy little liar. They've just appropriated umpty bajillion dollars for this thing. We're over $500 billion. No, it doesn't deny the delivery of anything for anybody. It's not like that even if we voted to defund the war and voted to bring them home, it's not like they're going to have to walk. We will have an orderly exodus from Iraq. Darn straight we will. Get on the planes, fly away home to the people who love you and want to take you into their warm and loving bosoms and help heal you. Well, the Democrats, by their vote today, said to America that they want their troops to eat camel. And this is the level of the absolutely mendacious, stupid rhetoric that comes out of the White House. He said it was political theater. A narrow majority in the House had abdicated its responsibility to protect the troops. Now, see, George, you doofus. You're the one who's not protecting the troops because you've got them in the middle of a civil war. I don't know what's out there because I don't necessarily get to watch the evening news. But as it turns out, according to the Christian Science Monitor, today, just 2 days after British troops pulled out of downtown Basra, Iraq's second largest city and center of the country's oil-rich south, fighting erupted between rival Shiite groups in street battles Thursday. An eyewitness reported that masked gunmen swept through the center of the city carrying AK-47s and rocket launchers as members of Muqtada al-Sadr's Mahdi Army and the Fadila Party, which controls the province, apparently fought over a government building just vacated by British troops. Gee, you know what? If it wasn't a civil war in the first place, that wouldn't have been happening now, would it? Protect the troops, George. Bring them home. Why won't you bring the troops home, George? Why do you hate our troops? Why do you hate freedom, George? The turmoil in the capital of the southern province, home to a key port and most of the country's oil wealth, signals the beginning of the kind of battles that could erupt in Iraq as outside forces depart, say analysts. There will be a power vacuum in Basra, says Martin Navius, an analyst at the Center for Defense Studies at King's College in London. As the British begin to extricate themselves from Basra, there will be fighting among these groups. Not maybe, not could be, will be, because it is the nature of the process there. It's what happens in a civil war. This isn't an insurgency. This is a battle. This is a battle to the death between groups that are hell-bent on controlling that pathetic, incredibly wealthy country. Now, you take that story and you see it, and you sort of lay it down next to the story about the 15 Marines that were captured today, the British Marines and sailors. Who were boarding a patrol? Supposedly, you know, this is the story. This is the story that comes out of the American press, and out of the, and so, you know, who knows if it's true? You know, we're at a point in time where we have to view the stories out of the American media the same way that the world used to look at stories out of TASS and Pravda and Izvestia, right? Yeah. So that who knows what was going on when by the way, you know, in case anybody was curious about the Shat al Arab waterway where this went down is one of the same things that was the casus belli for the Saddam to attack Iran in 1980. Same crap, different day. And so we will naturally argue that the Iranians went into Iraqi territorial waters. The Iranians say, no, you were in Iranian territorial waters. And the next thing you know, you've got a reason for a shooting war. Now, I'm reading some stories that say that negotiations are underway about this. And you know that if that's the case, somewhere in the White House, George Bush is sitting there, daggum negotiations. I hate the negotiations. Because, see, if he can make the thing with Iran part, and I mentioned this earlier, I just want you to be aware of this stuff. If he can make the attack on Iran a function of what's going on in Iraq, then the war on Iran becomes a function of the Iraq war resolution. So the British are gone from Basra. There's a power vacuum there. The Shia are fighting each other for control. Both of whom, God knows where they get their weapons. But they're fighting each other for control. There's chaos on the... because Basra sits hard by the Shat al Arab. And the United States said, oh, there's a power vacuum. We cannot have a power vacuum gap. And the next thing you know, these Royal Marines and these sailors in Her Majesty's Navy are being held captive in Iran. And George Bush gets to scream that Iran struck the first blow. Just like LBJ hollered about the Gulf of Tonkin. Just like Adolf Hitler hollered about that supposed attack on a German radio installation by the Polish menace. And you know, none of those other examples worked out too well, did they? But they do have the common thread of being abject and utter lies. And of course, it certainly does change everything in regard to how the Congress might look at things, doesn't it? So, you know, what Phil said early on is right. Call Barbara Lee's office. Call Dennis Kucinich's office. Call Maxine Waters' office. Michaud, McNulty. Call Ron Paul's office. Call these brave people who stood up and demanded an end to the war, and thank them, and tell them you're behind them. And tell them that you will continue to support them as they move to end the war. News is next. When we come back, if you're so inclined, your phone calls at 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. A couple of lines open. They're here for you, because this is your voice, America's liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Sorry.
Quality News Network. The House voted today to approve the $124 billion Iraq War spending bill. The bill requires combat operations in Iraq to end by September 2008 or earlier. The vote is seen as a victory for House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. She said, quote, "The American people have lost faith in the president's conduct of the war." Just an hour after the House vote, President Bush commented on the passage of the Iraq bill, accusing the House of abdicating its responsibility by passing the legislation which he says undermines the troops. The president says the vote and his promised veto will delay the delivery of resources needed by U.S. troops fighting the war in Iraq. Since the beginning of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, Congress has provided $500 billion to fund them, not including the $124 billion bill before Congress now. More than 3,200 U.S. troops have been killed since the Iraq War began over 4 years ago. Today in the Persian Gulf, 15 British soldiers and Marines were seized by Iranian naval forces. The British personnel had boarded a merchant ship in the Iraqi waters for a routine ship inspection when they were captured by the Iranians. The British government immediately protested the detentions, while the Iranian government has declined to make a comment. Iraq's deputy prime minister was gravely injured today at his home when a man wearing an explosive vest blew himself up in a courtyard mosque. 9 people were killed in the attack, which occurred near the Green Zone in Baghdad. Iran's president will not be coming to the United States tomorrow, as expected. He was to speak to the United Nations Security Council, which is considering further sanctions against his country for failing to halt its uranium enrichment program. No word on why his trip was canceled at the last minute. Six-party talks aimed at convincing North Korea to abandon its nuclear weaponry program may reconvene within 2 weeks. North Korea's envoy walked out of the negotiations yesterday, saying they will not participate until the U.S. unfreezes $25 million North Korean dollars. In Washington, a bipartisan immigration bill has been introduced in the House, which creates a new system permitting immigrants to work in the U.S. while they petition for American citizenship. A chemical used in rat poison is at least partially to blame for the national recall of over 60 million cans and pouches of pet food. According to agricultural officials, rodenticide on wheat imported from China was used in nearly 100 brands of dog and cat food. You're listening to the Quality News Network, science and business news. Coming up next, now this.
Heads up, crew. This is Captain Mike from Bombardier's Lounge, World War II Big Band Jazz. I've got a book for all of you crew members interested in World War II in the air. Its title is Letters Home, Memoirs of a World War II Troop Carrier Pilot by Frank G. Hathaway. Hathaway's book is dedicated to the air crewmen who lost their lives in the Southwest Pacific, 1942 to 1946, while flying their unarmed C-46s and C-47s over the jungles, the ocean and mountains in New Guinea and the Philippines. In his book, Frank talks in his letters home about his experiences flying as a pilot with the 6th Troop Carrier Squadron, the first squadron of troop carrier planes in the Southwest Pacific. This is a book you're really going to enjoy having in your library. It's available at Amazon.com. Get this book. Ask for it by name. Letters Home by Frank G. Hathaway. Published by Trafford Publishing. That's an order.
A scientific report issued today says ocean-going ships produce more air-polluting sulfur dioxide than all of the world's vehicles combined. The International Council on Clean Transportation is calling on shipping companies to voluntarily clean up their act. A Southern California farm is suing Taco Bell for alleging that its green onions spread E. coli through the fast food chain last December. The farm's onions were first linked to the outbreak, but then later cleared. More than 70 people were sickened in the outbreak. Prices for birth control pills are doubling and in some cases tripling on college campuses nationwide. A change in Medicaid rebates means pharmaceutical companies no longer have an incentive for providing inexpensive drugs to student health centers. The Los Angeles City Attorney's Office will file misdemeanor theft charges against 10 airport screeners at LAX who are accused of stealing personal items from passengers' bags. Celebrities including Paris Hilton were among those robbed. In February, sales of existing homes were up by the largest amount in nearly 3 years, according to the National Association of Realtors. They rose 3.9% last month. Light sweet crude is trading at $62.28 a barrel, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was up 20 points, the Nasdaq down 3 points, and the S&P 500 was up 2 points. There is more on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Christine Kendall.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Six past. We've got another 50 minutes or so of wonderful, lively front porch conversation here on the Head On Radio Network, and we go straight to the phones, 877-443-2366. Jim joins us. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
What's up, Bob?
I'm getting along. How about you?
I just been... Damn, I almost set myself on fire here. Listen,
don't do that.
Y'all covered everything so well, but I don't have anything to offer except on Freaky Friday tonight. The film is entitled Werewolf in a Girl's Dormitory, and the lead song of it is There's a Ghoul in School.
Now, that sounds like a winner.
Well, I just thought I would share that with you, okay?
I gotcha.
Okay, y'all have a good evening.
You too, Jim.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. A ghoul in school. Okay. Now, backing up just a little bit, please, if you don't mind. By the way, you know, last night we ended the program with the terrified story of the right-wingers who were afraid that a hate crime bill, you know, designed to enhance the punishment of people who crucify other people for, beating the snot out of them and killing them because they don't like how they have sex. You recall that these people were flipping out saying, oh, how's this for starters in a police report? A white Caucasian male committed a hate crime for asking a black female who was cross-dressing as a white albino male to leave the men's room so his child could pee in peace. Now, never mind the grammatical question of whose child we're talking about here that needs to pee in peace. Never mind that. These people are so freaked out. I got a charming little series of photographs today from our good friend Cossack of a hippo and a tortoise in Africa. A one-year-old baby hippopotamus that was rescued and taken to a game preserve. And it bonded with a 130-year-old tortoise. And what you get out of this, there's a sentence here, and I feel really bad for the hippo and the tortoise, because I expect any day now to see American Family Association action alerts coming out about it. Ecologist Paula Kahumbu, who is in charge of Lafarge Park, told Agence France-Presse, quote, "It is incredible. A less than a year-old hippo has adopted a male tortoise about a century old, and the tortoise seems to be very happy with being a mother." Don't these ecologists understand that that is a sin against God's law? 130-year-old male tortoises have no business trying to be a mother to a year-old hippopotamus. It's a violation of Deuteronomicus 1576. Not to mention Exodential 31:2. So, you know, these and it turned, I even ran it past Snopes, and it's a real true story. It happened in 2005. And it's charming. The hippopotamus, nicknamed Owen and weighing about 300 kilograms, that's 650 pounds, was swept down Sabiki River into the Indian Ocean and then forced back to shore onto the Kenyan coast. And because apparently if a hippopotamus spends much time in salt water, they begin to dehydrate and they die. The hippo follows the tortoise exactly the way it follows its mother. Please, don't let the American Family Association hear about this. Please let this tortoise and this hippo live together in peace. Because after all, we'd hate to see the Republicans trying to introduce bills to legislate the Defense of Hippopotamus Mothers Act, wouldn't we? Okay, so I'm being a little bit facetious. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Preston calls in from Denver. Hey, Preston, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
I'm doing well. I was just chuckling hearing you read your scripture there, Deuteronomus and all those things about...
Well, you know, the book of Exodificus is one of my favorites. It's second only to the book of Flip-Floppians.
Speaking of things that have had me laughing recently, I just rented the DVD Borat.
Oh, yes.
And I don't know if you've had a chance to see that.
I have not.
I thought it was absolutely brilliant and hysterical. I mean, there are some very, you know, kind of touchy, you know, some uncomfortable segments for sure, but I thought he did something really brilliant.
Well, Sacha Baron Cohen is without a doubt, say whatever you will, he is fearless.
Okay.
Because I saw an outtake, it was probably over at YouTube, an outtake from his TV show, you know, the Ali G show.
You know, I'm not familiar with that.
Well, it's where Borat was born.
Okay.
But several other characters were as well, including a gay Austrian hairdresser.
Okay.
And there was a segment where he went down on the sidelines of a University of Alabama football game in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, picked up the pom-poms and cheered with the cheerleaders. And, you know, the rednecks were screaming and flipping the bird and, you know, doing everything that just makes the South look so good. And even got into the locker room and interviewed one of the players and said, "So how is it for you to know that so many gay Austrian men find you so sexy and desirable?" And bless his heart, the young man handled it with complete aplomb, and he just, "I ain't gay." But no, he's absolutely fearless.
Yeah, and Borat the movie was very much a string of scenarios like that, and hysterical, and yeah, really enjoyed it, and glad to know it's being produced and, you know, distributed and stuff. It's won so many awards, it's gotten a lot of attention. And
well, and there's no doubt about it, Preston, that the people who get skewered for the most part are right-wingers and fundamentalists, and that can't happen often enough to suit me.
Yeah, although I do want to put in a good word for some of the evangelicals.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
I don't know if you noticed, but about a week or two ago, the NEA, the National Association of Evangelicals, put out a some sort of open letter condemning the U.S. role in torture.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, that Christian peace witness that we had the interview concerning last week, they, among the people who were going to the White House this time last week, were the Pentecostal peace movement.
Huh.
So, you know, I guess I'm not trying to paint with an all-encompassing brush.
I don't hear that from you either.
But by the same token, I know some of these people, Preston.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, we've got Dobson down the road who, every time some group does do something constructive or progressive, he's there to, you know, rally his supporters and condemn it. You know, they wrote a letter in response to the evangelicals and their climate, their creation care movement.
Yeah, demanding that the leader of it at the National Association be fired.
Yeah, yeah.
And for the and you know, I love the language from, you know, it just it and it's sort of the big giveaway, Preston, because it says this will divert the attention of evangelical Americans from that which really matters, abortion.
Right.
And that's code. And anybody who has, you know, it's like the Bible says, you know, he who has ears to hear and eyes to see can hear and see that that is code for we don't want them doing anything that might get them a voting Democrat.
Right. Right.
Because Dobson sees it all as a wholly owned subsidiary of the Republican Party, or sees the Republican Party as a wholly owned subsidiary of his religion industry.
Yep. I went to their headquarters, and they've got a big gift shop and stuff, a bookstore and things like that. I was particularly struck by the gay section and how gays are framed by them. You know, they'll talk about, you know, illnesses, and it's all negativity. And I don't know. I mean, they talk about, you know, the spread of diseases, which is exactly what the fascists were doing against Jews and gypsies. We do it against Native American people. Just this week I heard this guy named Steven Pinker, who knows a lot about linguistics. He was actually a student of Chomsky's. And he was on NPR talking about how we're making the world kinder through our superior Western civilization and the Enlightenment and so on and so forth. And here and there are elements of truth to that. But I don't know, considering our record with indigenous people, I think they might have something to say about our kindness. And it's going on to this day. I mean, people, indigenous people in Nigeria, the Ogoni, mm-hmm. Chevron, and their definition of progress and kindness and wealth.
Well, I'm reminded, Preston, of that great. I don't know if you ever watched much Monty Python, but there was a skit that they used to do that was based in Australia, where all the philosophy professors were named Bruce. But at one point, the leader of the group says, "And I don't want anybody doing anything bad to the Abbos. If there's anybody watching."
Right.
And you know, that's Western kindness. You know, we'll be kind as long as somebody's watching. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of right after the tsunami when, what's his name? Dr. Herman Munster, used to be majority leader. How quickly we forget. The guy from Tennessee, the surgeon, icky guy.
Frist.
Yeah. Cat Killer Frist. He went to visit the tsunami, and as he was leaving, they were taking photographs, and he told the photographer, "Now wait a minute, let me get over here. I want you to get a really good picture of the devastation behind me." You know, I'm not making this up, Preston.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I want to switch gears, if I may.
I will engage the clutch.
Okay, thank you. Last time I called you, I mentioned a letter to the Denver Post that I thought was excellent.
Yes.
And I'd like to read a few sentences of it.
Absolutely.
Oh, great. Thank you. He said, "The majority of modern immigration to the U.S. is rooted in economics. Ultimately, immigration issues will not be adequately addressed until U.S. trade policies and military aggression cease to serve an unquenchable corporate thirst for exploitable workers and resources. Current trade policies use debt to subjugate entire nations to U.S.-dominated international lending cartels and privatization schemes that reduce or eliminate environmental protections, worker rights, and social spending for the benefit of foreign investors. When control via trade policies fails, military action often begins. In either case, the resulting erosion of living and working standards triggers immigration to the U.S., where employers continue their attack on workers through fear, intimidation, threats of deportation, and pit workers against worker in order to roll back hard-won standards.
So. It's all there.
Yep.
And there's not a single piece of that to be disagreed with. I take a stand with regard to immigration that even rubs liberals the wrong way, or people who think that they're liberals, because I can't see focusing the ire and hatred of a nation on somebody who scrubs toilets.
Right.
I see working people.
Right.
So
I see nannies, wonderful, wonderful people raising our children.
Yeah.
And often in a very beautiful, helpful way, helping the kids to become bilingual and bicultural.
Imparting some pretty decent values.
Yeah.
I can't see turning the focus of our hatred on working people, because it's not the working people's problem, like the quote you just read. We drive this. We make this happen. When I interviewed Tony Bourdain a couple of nights ago, I jokingly asked him if Mario Batali, another great chef there in New York, would agree with him. And he said, well, I don't know why it works out this way, but I get, he said, the people who help me in my kitchen come from Puebla State in Mexico. Tony gets all the Ecuadorians. Well, Ecuador is a perfect example. Look at what the World Bank did to Ecuador. You want to know why there's an Ecuadorian legal and illegal immigration into the United States? Take a look at what the World Bank did to Ecuador.
Yep. John Perkins wrote that so important book of his own experiences as an economic hitman. And I'm glad to see that he's coming out with another one. But this time he's been joined by about a dozen other people in that field who are exposing it. So there's some progress being made. By the way, it was a person named Blake Pendergrass from Denver who wrote that letter, and kudos to him and to the Denver Post for publishing that.
For having the nerve to publish it.
Yes. So here and there we see some media movement. In fact, just by dumb luck, I stumbled upon the most recent issue of U.S. News and World Report, which, I'm usually not real thrilled with.
No, it doesn't. They make Newsweek and Time look positively communist.
But I have to say, I was completely impressed with this current issue. On the cover, it says, Making America Better, from airfares to sex ed, what we can learn from the rest of the world. And inside is just a very good story on things like they have this picture of people hanging out on the coast. And it says, on the beach in Normandy, French workers are guaranteed 5 weeks vacation and 12 public holidays, that and a 35-hour week. They go on about teachers are paid better and more respected in Japan. It talks about how we need to be able to build trains that go 150 miles per hour like some other cities do, and just a lot of things that are
being... Well, the very idea that there's someone out there in the world that we refer to, Preston, as the corporate media, who would suggest, because this is heresy to the right wing, we must all understand, who would suggest that the world has anything to teach the United States?
Yeah,
I mean that's out and out heresy.
Yeah. But
we do. We've got so much learning to do, and the sad thing is, we need to learn these things and incorporate them into the way we live and the way we go about doing things pretty quickly, because the nature of globalization is such that, what's the best way to put this? Globalization does not reward the unique best in a culture. Globalization rewards the drive toward the lower and the middle, or the lower middle.
And homogeneity.
Right.
You know, they want their particular seeds everywhere, their particular T-shirts made out of rayon or some, you know, fossil fuel T-shirts with American sports teams or military images on the T-shirts, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's a real shame. But, we'll see. I mean, then again, you know, they're always screaming about how bad a thing multiculturalism is.
Oh, that drives me crazy.
You know, doesn't that, what are they suggesting? Are they for monoculture? I mean, what are the implications?
Well, I think we're talking racist code here.
Yeah.
Because there's a determination that when you, especially here in the United States, these people, you know, well, they need to come. I saw a bumper sticker while I was in Alabama president. Welcome to America. Now speak English.
Right. Right.
You know, and I wanted to pull the guy over and say, welcome to America. Now speak Choctaw.
There you go.
There you go. Because, I mean, we know what it does for the brain to learn foreign languages. We know. What is America? This is the question that gets begged, Preston. What is American culture?
Yeah.
What is American culture?
Right.
What is there in the United States that does not come from somewhere else unless you happen to be sitting in a Navajo sweat lodge? I mean, I don't think there's an answer. There's nothing. Nothing.
Yeah. And even there, you know, sometimes European Americans forget their own deep tribal roots. You know, their own sweat lodges, their own dances and drumming.
Right, and I remarked once upon a time that, you know, the fact of the matter is, I have no idea what, you know, my makeup is Welsh, English, and Scots. And I have no idea what my people's religion was. It got subverted first by the Romans, who slayed all the Druids, mm-hmm. and then it got subverted by the Roman Catholic Church.
Yeah.
So that you know, there's the very names we give people aren't even the names of our origins. You know, we named our one of our, you know, names like Sarah and Elizabeth and Margaret and Louise. Those things don't come from my Celtic past.
Right, right. I'm Welsh and German and some other stuff. I know my grandmother, my dad's mom, was born in Dresden. And real recently I mentioned to my dad Slaughterhouse-Five by Kurt Vonnegut,
mm-hmm.
and I told him that was about Dresden. And yeah, it was interesting.
I saw a recent, we're just kind of all over the place, Preston, but I saw a recent news story where, of course, there were right-wingers trying to get Slaughterhouse-Five pulled off the shelves.
Really?
In a school library or off of a school reading list because it was inappropriate. And we experienced that firsthand here just a few days ago. My son in fifth grade is studying a unit on the Holocaust. And this one really sort of made my eyeballs bulge. He was supposed to do a little project and bring pictures related to the Holocaust.
Uh-huh.
And so one of the pictures he wanted to use was of children who had been experimented on by the Nazis. Little Jewish children, little gypsy children.
Mm-hmm.
And they were sitting there, and they weren't exactly wearing their school uniforms. And he got called down by his teacher, who said, this is not appropriate for fifth grade. This is far too graphic. You know, I don't know a lot about the Holocaust that isn't graphic.
Right. Right.
It was horror.
I heard someone call into a radio station and say something about how this couple, they weren't going to show their kid an Inconvenient Truth because they were afraid of scaring the child. And I feel like, you know, it's kind of like, we'll let the kid be a kid kind of sentiment, which I can be sympathetic to, but at the same time, you know, the establishment is not letting our kids be kids. You know, they're filling them with all sorts of reactionary militarist propaganda.
Absolutely.
And anti-environmental propaganda, anti-intellectual, and right down the line, anti-worker. So, yeah, an inconvenient truth also. Sometimes there are things to be scared about. You know, it can be a scary world sometimes. We need to face the things that we fear. But from that, you know, some vision.
Well, but what these people were actually afraid of, Preston, was that their child might get it. Because,
right.
You know, with the right-wingers, you have to work hard to avoid, and frankly, I do kind of put them in the same class with Holocaust deniers, because you have to really engage in some mental gymnastics to deny either one of these things.
Yep. And there are so many, you know, aside from greenhouse potentialities and how catastrophic that can continue to get, I mean, there's actual harms going on right now due to the mining of fossil fuels and the inappropriate disposal of it in rivers, you know, killing off fish and the food sources of people all over the world. In fact, I saw that movie, speaking of whales, there's that movie, How Green Was My Valley.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, about battles with the coal industry. But, yeah, it's interesting.
And
speaking, these continue.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Preston, because speaking of battles with the coal industry, we need to send out some congratulations and a little yay and a little bit of whoopee and just be doggone proud for these people who have participated in and led the fight. We won one today.
How's that?
Here in West Virginia. I've been informed by our good friend Nanette that the people who actually care about this state have won a case against the Army Corps of Engineers. The Associated Press is reporting that a federal judge ruled today that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers violated federal law when it issued valley fill permits for four mountaintop removal mines without adequately determining whether the environment would be harmed.
Mm.
And he actually rescinded permits that had been issued to a number of mines that are all run by Massey Energy. Now, of course, what will happen is this will get appealed to the Fourth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, which is staffed by a bunch of conservative old freaks.
Mm-hmm.
It's always good to win one of these.
I hear you.
And then it goes up to the Fourth Circuit, and the old freaks say, you know, screw you, West Virginians.
I know. Yeah.
This is the third time, I think, that we've won on this level.
That's great to hear.
And I hope this one stands up. The Army Corps of Engineers, Preston, had said, well, they don't need to do any more extensive reviews because they can fast-track it.
Right.
And if you ever see pictures of mountaintop removal, you'll know what we're talking about. And you know, valley fill almost sounds kind of innocuous.
Like free markets, you know, that sounds so nice.
Right.
You know, they fast-track these free markets, you know, over our cultures. It's a real sin.
But these, you know, there's some powerful language in this thing. The judge is a man named Chuck Chambers, and he wrote, "The destruction of headwater streams and the trees and plants around them eliminates a large amount of organic material from the stream network and deprives downstream resources of the other functions typically served by headwater streams." Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that may sound like a little bit like environmental gobbledygook, but that is a profound statement for a finding of fact by a federal judge.
Yes. That's great.
Because that lays the groundwork to stop this.
Mm-hmm. We, here in Colorado, we have a representative, I forget his name, but he went to D.C. recently. He's presenting a paper about the effects on wildlife by all these, we have a record number of drills going in and all that infrastructure, the service roads and so on and so forth, and how that's affecting wildlife and getting sports people, you know, outdoors people to organize themselves and resist this attack on their culture.
Right.
And there.
And yet the other day I saw another one of those stupid stickers on another idiot's automobile, Sportsman for Bush. Now, where are they going to fish? In the middle of a Walmart parking lot? I mean, I don't think it's unfair to ask that kind of question.
Right, right.
Okay, well. So, you know, it's you know, it's good to get a win once in a while, but it's also valid that we keep an eye on an eye on the SOBs.
Yeah, and an eye on the heroes, and I'd say Rocky Anderson for president.
You know, I'm beginning to think that looks mighty good. I could see maybe, and I'll get emails for even saying this, I could see an Al Gore Rocky Anderson ticket. I could see, you know, a Dennis Kucinich Rocky Anderson ticket.
One thing that Rocky did that was really intriguing, and we know about his speeches, he had an article in the New York Times, actually did a little piece on him that I read on Common Dreams. But this other thing I learned about him was that he lived in this kind of, you know, standard suburb of Salt Lake City, and he tore up his lawn and he created a huge garden instead.
Oh, wow.
And it's kind of like an act of civil disobedience too, because
violated the neighborhood association.
Exactly.
exactly. Thou shalt not have flowers in Utah.
Right. And you know, there are all these kind of entrenched interests who sell the turf, who sell the pesticides and all that stuff, who sell the lawnmowers, who sell the gas and the oil and all that stuff that goes with it. So a person doing that, these executives see this stuff and they're like, we got a problem here on the revenue growth issue. So, but he did it, and he's being a model for others. I just started this great book called Food Not Lawns, and about people growing organic food on their lawns and sharing it with neighbors, and some people even selling it to
we do that here in West Virginia, and we call it a garden.
There you go. So, you know, they fell out of
style. Here in a couple of weeks, I'm going to plow up the backyard again.
Great.
If I can just keep the deer out of it, I'll be ahead of the game. Preston, so good to talk to you.
Likewise, Bob.
Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And a reminder for you. Let me get get Agnes's calendar here. Preston and I frequently talk about the books that we're into. And we've got a couple of dandy discussions coming next week. Three thus far, to be precise. Monday evening, we will be joined by Professor Bart Ehrman at the second half hour of the first hour of the program, 6:30 Eastern Time. Professor Bart Ehrman, chair of the Religious Studies Department at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, author of Misquoting Jesus. For those who like to read their Bibles, I don't think there's a more important book out there right now. And also on Wednesday, the 28th, prayer meeting, we'll be joined by a gentleman by the name of Dan Gilgoff, who has authored a recently released book called The Jesus Machine. And that book is centered on his assertion of how the religion industry, the religious right, whatever you care to call them, are winning in the culture wars. And finally, last and certainly not least, one of our very dearest friends will be joining us again on the program Wednesday evening, Jeff Biggers, author of The United States of Appalachia and In the Sierra Madre, will be joining us. And Jeff is just a joy to have on the program, a beautiful writer and a great journalist, and a darn fine conversationalist. He'll be with us because, among other things, and this is good news for the I won't buy it in hardback crowd, The United States of Appalachia has just been released in paperback. If you didn't feel like you could get it in hardback, now you don't have an excuse, because, and this should be on everybody's bookshelf in this country. This is an amazing book because what, Agnes?
It's great for social studies projects too.
How would we know that?
I wouldn't. But it is.
It's how did you do? How'd you do on that fifth grade social studies project there, Agnes?
Bite me, Bob.
But Jeff will join us as well. So, you know, we try to make stuff interesting, and as I told you, we'll try to get Rocky Anderson on the program. You know, we do this for you, because this is, and I don't know, is this a philosophy moment? I don't see the revolution starting on the Horn or Nova M or Air America or as the result of any one particular host or hostess's actions or words. What we have to do here is provide the dialogue, the conversation that empowers people, that moves people to take their own action and be part of their own revolution. A revolution that takes place in being bold enough and brave enough to engage your fellow Americans in conversation elsewhere. We've got to beat down the daily din of the Limbaughs and the Hannitys and the O'Reillys and point out their flaws, their inadequacies, their failures, and their outright lies until such point that they are laughed at by children on the street. My God, did I get that right? Did Arnold Schwarzenegger recently say that Rush Limbaugh was irrelevant? So, you know, maybe that's where we're headed. We'll take a break here in a second. But another reminder, you know, the Guy James anniversary special offer is still out there, as put together by our good friend Billy Shears. For anyone who will sign up to support Guy at the level of $10 a month, $10, Billy will provide a sort of greatest hits album of Guy James' stuff with music beds, and it'll be really cool and produced nicely. But as a function of this anniversary special, he will also provide you a disc of 14 songs of your choosing, all as an inducement to do the right thing and help keep an important voice like Guy's on the air each and every day. You can go and contribute at theguyjamesshow.com, theguyjamesshow.com, the website. There's a PayPal link there. I hope you will. I'm Bob Kincaid.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If
you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Homeland Security advisories are at the highest levels. If you have a disability or special need, you may have to take additional steps to protect yourself and your household in the event of an emergency. Contact your local Office of Emergency Management or Fire Department to find out about special assistance that may be available in your community. Go to www.floridadisaster.org for more information. This message has been brought to you by the Florida Division of Emergency Management, the Florida broadcasters, and this radio station.
I'm Alec Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Up and battered around, been sent up and I've been shot down. You're the best thing that I've ever found, and we'll be with her. Reputation's changed.
14 minutes before the hour, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On for a Friday night, rolling downhill to the end of things. Just trying to, a couple of last little things that I did want to hit before the weekend comes. The weekend hits, and it's, for me, it's like being one of those weirdo pro-life protesters that hangs around outside abortion clinics with tape on their mouth. I spend Saturday and Sunday walking around going, because I can't talk. What, Agnes? Well, okay, I do talk a lot. It's just that Agnes has to bear the brunt of it all. How can I say this? There are some who would say that I should probably be medicated for thinking some of the things I think. And this is probably one of them. You've heard it a couple of times if you've been listening to the top of the hour news from Quality News Network. And I said that I wanted to at least pass a couple of thoughts along about it. The headline of the story from the Associated Press, college students face sticker shock for birth control pills. Now, what has happened is, it used to be, once upon a time, it used to be that students at colleges, and we are talking here primarily about young women, could go and, for about maybe $10 a month, get what could arguably be called reasonably affordable birth control in the form of the pill. Because, we live in a culture that still mostly imposes the duty of birth control on the female, so that pasty-faced, doughy old white dudes can stand around outside abortion clinics going, with tape on their mouth. But what has happened, now about 39% of undergraduate women use oral contraceptives, which just boggles my mind that it's not 99%. Because, you know, what you really need on that degree track is a baby. But see, we live in an America where we reverence snowflake embryos, babysicles. Down there in the 300 degree liquid nitrogen.
Implant me, please.
And we don't reverence young women trying to build their knowledge. You know, get back in the kitchen. I'll be back in a minute. I got to talk to the mullah. No, I'm sorry. So what has happened is women are now paying about $22 a month for prescriptions that used to cost $10 a few months ago for birth control. Why? Well, as the AP report notes, it's a chain reaction started by a 2005. Wait a minute, 2005. Who was in control of the Congress and the White House? Oh, yeah, that would be the stinking right-wing religion industry crazier than a sprayed roach Republican Party. It's the result of a chain reaction started by a 2005 deficit reduction bill. Yeah, Clear Skies Initiative or a Healthy Forest or something crazy like that. That focused on Medicaid. Really, why? Oh, we're going to reduce the deficit by reducing Medicaid. I got it. Not by reducing the damn war, but by reducing the Medicaid. Okay, sure. College health officials say that they had no idea that the bill would affect them. Before the change, pharmaceutical companies, fine folks, typically sold drugs at deep discounts to a range of healthcare providers, including colleges. With contraceptives, one motivation was attracting customers, these young women, who would stay with the product for years. Another reason the discounts made business sense was that they didn't count against the drug makers in a formula calculating rebates they owed states to participate in Medicaid. Then comes along the right-wing Republican Congress 2005 deficit reduction Medicaid bill. Went into effect in January. Now the discounts to colleges mean drug manufacturers have to pay more to participate in Medicaid. Okay, am I the paranoid? Am I the paranoiac here? As a result of all this, fewer companies are willing to offer the discounts. Some students said they doubted the price increases would dissuade many students from buying contraceptives, but they said it would be noticed. The price hikes, according to Lindsay Hicks, a sexual health awareness peer educator at Kansas State University, Manhattan, Kansas, I think, where the price went from $10 to $30 a month, Lindsay Hicks said the price hikes will definitely have an effect on students. $30 is a bunch of money to a college freshman or a college sophomore, even a college senior, even a graduate student. $30 is a bunch of money. Let's see, at 25 cents a draft at Speedy's on Walnut Street in Morgantown, I don't know how far $30 would go. But no, from $10 to $30, I'm being facetious. But at $10, from $10 to $30 for birth control, there will be fewer young women on birth control. And don't you hesitate for a minute to think that that wasn't part and parcel of this legislation. We live in a 21st century America, or 11th century America. Sometimes I think I'm just sort of bouncing back and forth like Billy Pilgrim between them. Pooty wheat. That says that birth control causes spontaneous abortions. Now, bear in mind, the egg has never been fertilized. It doesn't get a chance. Oh, poor little egg. And you've got pharmacist freaks who should have their licenses pulled from them, who's, I won't fail your birth control prescription, but I'm married. I don't care. That means I really can't do it, because your husband ought to be getting you all knocked up and stuff, and what are you doing out in public anyway, woman? Where's your beekeeper suit? Of course, this is the pernicious effect of James Dobson, the pernicious effect of Jerry Falwell, of Pat Robertson, and all these goons who literally despise women. And I'll leave it at that, but, you know, this is the kind of stuff that flies under the radar. before they got out of town, the right-wing Republican majority in the Congress took a few good last smacks at people they just hate, and one of them was young women who were trying not to get pregnant.
Well, and they need to just not have sex.
Because these people are so upright and moral that they can, you know, they can tell you what you can do with your own body. And I won't mention, never mind, no. So, you know, bear that in mind. And finally, just because we gotta, it's the end of the week and I'd like to end on a giggle. Have you seen this? Mel Gibson's back. Yes, Lord, yes. He busted out in rage and just completely lost his cookies, as my darling wife would say, last night during a presentation on the campus of Cal State University Northridge, California, of course. Students and members of the Mayan community came to listen to the actor-director talk about his film Apocalypto. And a lady named Alicia Estrada, an assistant professor of Central American Studies at the school, began to question Mel's portrayal of Mayan culture in the film, accusing him of racial stereotyping. And she insisted that Gibson's depiction of Mayans as a bloodthirsty society that performed sacrificial ceremonies was both incorrect and racist, and Gibson reportedly erupted, yelling, "Lady, pluck off!" Only he didn't say pluck. As members of the Mayan community in the audience began to protest the way they were portrayed in the film, Mel screamed, "Make your own damn movie!" as they were being escorted out of the room. Well, how about that? They were escorted out of the room. The publicist, Mel's publicist, Alan Nerobe, can't make these names up, who apparently is very, very busy these days. The woman was a heckler who was rude and disrupted the event in as much as the event organizers had to escort her out. So she disrupted the event, not Mel when he screamed, "Make your own pluckin' movie." No, I'm sorry. Lady, pluck off. Oh, they're dangerous, they're devious, they're mean, and they're rotten. But sometimes, oh Jesus, sometimes they're fun. You know, you just want the Mel Gibsons around so that, you know, on a Friday night when you're trying to wrap the program up and you don't want to end on a grim note, you can always go to Mel. Hey, go to Mel. Ba-dum-bum. So that's it. Thanks, everybody, for everything this week. Thanks for tolerating my absence on Monday and Tuesday. It's awfully good to be home. The program tonight was produced by my darling, talented, lovely wife, Agnes. It was engineered by John Fox in Sydney, Australia. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams, the archives, and the podcasts of all the programs on the Horn. If you value these programs, then you need to do the right thing by Mel? Oh, boy. Get me my Aricept. By Ben. Do the right thing by Ben. He's got a fundraiser going on. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida, is our IT professional, and what an IT professional he is. We have wonderful mods in the chat room. If you've never been by the chat room, go by the chat room. Our news ninjas, Susan, Jean, Betsy, excellent all. Many thanks to the fine folks at iTunes Radio for carrying the programming of the Horn. Good on you. Little golf clap. And, of course, everything that happens on the Horn happens because there are several thousand members of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters who get up every day and they go and they build the American dream. And in building the American dream and supporting this network, they're helping to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you. You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Cheney heads to hospital for examination. Mastermind of USS Cole attack confesses. Senate okays limits on Gonzalez's authority. Bush affirms support for Gonzalez, but Gonzalez's hold on job grows uncertain. Australian detainee writes of beatings at Guantanamo. Lawmakers threaten FBI over spy powers. Patience for Iraq war is waning, says leaders. Rice warns against Iranian missile threats. Russia gives Iran ultimatum on enrichment. London is the world capital of the 21st century, says New York. Court probes limits on student speech. Taiwan to test defenses against China in a live fire drill. GOP candidates confront immigration policies. Obama more liberal than Kucinich analysis reveals. Is popular YouTube ad big trouble for Hillary? Schwarzenegger calls Rush Limbaugh irrelevant. KSM, is he the ultimate patsy and he confesses? These are the issues ahead on the Jeff Allen Wolf Show, starting now.